10 for her. You know there, you have you there. Doctors Without Borders. You know there. So that you. So those that are not there, we'll just jump them. Commission for Gender Equality. You there. UNICEF. You're not there. Triangle Project. You're not there. Amnesty International. You're there. Swift Legal Defense Center. Okay. Embrace Dignity. Well, are you there? Crystal Clear. Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You'll all get 10 minutes for the presentation. Let's try to summarize our presentation so that our questioning time is allocated a longer time. Thank you very much. We'll start with Sisong. Thank you, ma'am. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. It seems we are kind of experiencing some technical problems through my presentation. I don't know. Yes. PowerPoint has been prepared for the honorable members in, of the House and the Commissioner of the SALAC and the esteemed visitors here in the room. A brief introduction. Sonke founded in 2003 at the Second National Meeting held in the Western Cape. It is one of the leading human rights organizations that promotes and protects the health and human rights of the visitors. Currently hosted at SWET in the observatory, we have a presence of membership in 9 provinces and offices in 6 provinces. Am I loud? I've got a flu, so I'm going to make sure that I'm okay. Okay. Apology. So we currently host at the Sweden Observatory. We have presence of membership in 9 provinces and offices in 6 provinces. We're co-hosting with other partner organizations which are sub-recipients of the Global Fund ACOSA in other provinces where we don't have offices. We are affiliated with the regional and the global bodies. The regional is African Sex Worker Alliance, and the global is the Network Sex Worker Project, national is the FUJIGI, the coalition of calling for the decriminal and advocating for the rights of sex workers, and the South African AIDS National Council. As the representative here today, I have the Sonke mandate and the support of Sonke and members nationally to speak and adding on our voices for the call of decriminalization of sex work in South Africa. Why I qualify to speak today as a founding member of the Sesonke National Movement and coordinator of the sex worker and the sex work activist, criminalization has not only affected me, but many organization activists who reach out to sex workers on a daily basis. It is not only the campus out efforts in us being able to provide our much needed services to sex workers, but also to undermine our constitutional afforded civil liberties, especially relating to our health, legal and the human rights. I sit on the CCM also summit as an alternate member representing the sex workers and other key populations and the vulnerable population sectors. And I'm a member of the civil society that represents the sex worker sector, South Africa, and at ASWA, which I represent all the national sex worker organizations in each Africa country, I'm an advisory committee member of the academy, which is affiliated member of the Global Network of Sex Work, who represents sex workers internationally and is also co-host funded by some of the international development partners from the UN, WHO, UNAIDS, and UN Population Fund. I sit on the NDP as a key population expert group member and advisory for the UN Development Programme. And nationally, as a member of the steering committee within the ACTIG Coalition, who represent 88 human rights organizations consisting of activists, rights organizations consisting of the human rights defenders, advocating for law reform and sex workers, that we call victims of sex workers in South Africa. Some of the ACTIG members include Amnesty internationally, CGE Human Rights Watch, COSATO, Sonke Gender, and People Opposing Women Abuse, Treatment Action Campaign, and the Childline, South Africa, etc. That is the representative of all sectors, namely gender, women's rights, human rights, legal, and the public. Public health. Main points in this respect, in this report, are that it is satisfied with. Firstly, I think we need to define a certain ways and phrases that used in the report so that we're all on the same page. What is law reform according to the HTTPP, law.gov.com society changes over time, and so do we. So do the view and the values of the citizens. Law reform, it is a process of changing and updating laws that they reflect the current values and need of the modern society. Those responsibilities must be identified and see the shift in the values, behaviors of expectations. The law must be flexible, receptive, to change, stays fair, relevant, and up-to-date. Above all, it must serve the needs of the people. It must serve all the needs of the people based conduct in the irrelevant values will only let down the people that it is intended to serve and protect. Some of the ways society changes will generate the need for the law reform to include changing social values, changing morality, and changing ethics, and changing technology, and significant events. Sometimes law reform is driven not by social change, but by procedure, and it is sometimes necessary to simplify and tidy the law, making it easy to access and understand to ensure that it is more consistent for all the South Africans. These are clearly principles that just by reading through the report was clearly not taken into consideration. Secondly, still on the report of the definition according to the Oxford Dictionary, work a noun and a verb involving mentally and physically effort done in order to achieve the purpose to result means earning income, exploitation, the action of the fact of treating someone unfairly in order to benefit from their work / resources. In the report, it is never given a formal legal definition, nor is the brief definition explained any further. In the presentation, in combating of the Trafficking in Persons Act to 2013, explanation defined by reference to practice like slavery, forced labor, and the removal of the body parts. As a paragraph 2.53, it is stated that Marxist feminists advocate that prostitutes decrease the dignity of the human caught in voluntary servitude to a system that unconscionably exploits people. From those passages, it is clear that the author of the report are using the exploitation primary to describe forms of employment that a person enters into because they are poor. However, what is interesting about the statement made in the report on the topic of the exploitation is that they draw on the radical arguments that have been against capitalism, colonialism, and other systems of the oppression generally, but others have chosen to apply the narrow to sex work. I just made a few of the dissatisfaction in this. I'll just quickly read. For instance, the article by Sarah Bongeng cites in paragraph 2.53, the report quotes only of a statement of Karl Marx with the complex version stating prostitution is only specific expression of the general prostitution of the labor. And since it is the relation in which falls not the prostitution done, but also the one who prostitutes. And the later abominations is the still greater, the capitalist, etc., also comes under the head, that is to say, Maxi himself argues that all workers are exploited under the capitalism system, that sex work is only a specific expression of the tendency and the ultimate blame rests the capitalist. But if work under capitalism, especially the South African version of the capitalism, often amounts of the exploitation is puzzling the categories of work and exploitation and placed in opposition on each and each other in the report. According to the Marxian philosophy, the implicit philosophy adopted in the report, or most work under these conditions, is by definition exploitation. Inherent bias, the illogical justification in the statement. The Commission hopes that the response will be guided and equipped functionality and large society in the quest to prevent the data and reduce the prostitution. It is worth distinguished attempts to suppress the work by the criminalizing various parties involved in attempts the authors would describe the provisions form more generally by buying and selling sex in is a symptom of the social inequality, and that some of the sex society would be better off without it. And one of the sympathetic to this more general abolition view, while still regarding criminal law as an unethical and counterproductive means to achieve the overall end. This distinction is, however, led in the report, which points to the more generally context. It is stating the ideal would be transform the society where no person is faced with the option and is in prostitution to combat the poverty. But the focus of the criminal law is virtually practical recommendation to oppose to issue like poverty inequality. Supporters of the decriminalization never argued that it would reduce the amount of commercial sex work in the short term, promote the decriminalization program, support programs like poverty reduction to create office job opportunities that may have indirect effect on reducing the number of people selling sex. And failing to provide a perspective of sexual sex work, presumably interviewed in this evidence, gathered efforts are barely quoted in the final report. putting aside the exception as well as single reference to Ms. Linda as the sex worker currently working at Sisonke and Tandi as a sex worker in Hilton. The only people identified as sex workers who are mentioned or quoted in the report were participants in the Rocking Chair documentary, Behind the Mask, commissioned by a Christian fundamentally group as a variety of members. The production crew for this documentary who are not themselves identified as sex workers. This is a perspective strongly influenced by the idea that sex work is only proper within heterosexual marriage, argued by the NIDU in the film Along Lines. The FBI is also known for opposing feminist gay rights and abortion rights. 24 in the context, it seems like the film makers selected the informal sex workers and former sex workers who are sympathetic to the Christian perspective. Okay. So the recommendations would be the full decriminalization of sex work, proper consultation with the self-identified sex workers, use of the research like the Lancet and the HIV, IBBS report that was done by Tim Lane, revise the impact of the human rights violations and abuse experienced by sex workers and other vulnerable population. The NSP, the IMS, IMEC was also headed by the current president at the country, the Honorable Cyril Ramaphosa, where he was still deputy president and launched in the on the 11th of May in 2016 of March. I am here representing the sex workers, Sisonke members, that are plus minus 1,500 members in the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we have the second group, Center for Appeals, Legal Studies?
Thank you. The Center for Applied Legal Studies would like to thank the caucus for allowing us to come and present today. My presentation will be brief, and just as a roadmap, I'm going to discuss only 2 points. The first is called Listening to the Voices of Marginalized Individuals, and the second is called Demoralizing Sex Work. Now, as a starting point with listening to the voices of marginalized individuals, I support the call by Sisonke that the law reform report did not adequately engage with the views and experiences of sex workers. There's 2 things I'd like to speak or refer to with regards to this. The first is I note the irony of me coming here today and speaking on behalf of sex workers or for sex workers. And the second is the inherent problem with structures such as parliaments that can be places where sex workers, due to the unequal power relations, are sometimes do not have equal access to. And we have to think about how we can deconstruct these types of places where we don't just have NGOs speaking on behalf of sex workers, and we have more groups like Sisonke coming through and having sex workers speak on behalf of themselves. Now, sex workers are a marginalized group that are already silenced in our society, and this is because of many layers of vulnerability, and just 3 of the many is that sex workers are often women, and this is linked to the problems around patriarchy. The second is race, with many sex workers being black, and our history of apartheid. And the third is the fact that sex workers are sex workers. And this has a link to our moralizing attitudes about sex, and specifically our moralizing attitudes about women and women having sex. By not engaging with sex workers and deciding things on behalf of sex workers, we are treating sex workers as children. We must avoid paternalism at all times. This act of speaking on behalf or deciding on behalf of sex workers, not listening to what they want, is another form of violence against sex workers, and this violence is the violence of silencing them. Our democracy is a participatory one. There is a requirement for the legislature to engage with vulnerable and marginalized groups in our country in terms of Section 57(1)(b) of our Constitution. And since the Law Reform Commission must advise such bodies as our legislature around legislation and changes, there's the inferential duty that the Law Reform Commission must also meaningfully engage. Justice Sachs and Doctors for Life expressed the following. Minority groups should feel that even if their concerns are not strongly represented, they continue to be part of the body politic with the full civic dignity that goes with citizenship in a constitutional democracy. Public involvement would also be of particular significance for members of groups that have been victims of processes of historical silencing. It is constitutive of their dignity as citizens today that they not only have a chance to speak, but also enjoy the assurance they will be listened to. Participatory democracy and the interest of minority groups is also supported in international law, such as the African Charter on Humans and People's Rights, which affirms the rights of communities to self-determination, which is defined as the ability of the people to freely determine their political status and freely pursue their economic, social and cultural development. Cal submits that this type of meaningful engagement was not done in the Law Reform Commission report. My second topic, the demoralization of sex work. Now, just as one term or one instance of demoralizing sex work in the Law Reform Commission report is something that may not seem very important, but is. It's the use of terms like prostitute and prostitution. The reason given by the Law Reform Commission in its report was one of consistency, and the one that was said earlier on was that they didn't want to show a predetermined outcome. But in using the terms prostitute and prostitution, you are in fact showing a predetermined outcome, and this is an outcome that is based on prejudice and discrimination. It is universally accepted that the proper use or the proper way to refer to the, sex, a commercial selling of sex, is sex work. Now, I use this example. Okay. So a sex worker can identify themselves any way they choose to. A sex worker can call herself a prostitute. But as NGOs, as the government, as the Law Reform Commission, when a term is steeped in prejudice and discrimination, you do not have the choice to use that term. An example may be the fight for gay and lesbian rights. The Law Reform Commission, NGOs, can't call a gay man a fag. He may identify as a fag, but it is discriminatory for us to do so. So what I'm trying to point out here is the Law Reform Commission was acting in a prejudicial and discriminatory way by referring to the term prostitute and prostitution, and should have known better, because they put their reasoning on the fact that sex workers may define themselves as that, but it's not your choice to do so too. The term prostitute does not simply denote a person who sells her labor, but goes on to connote what Smith calls layers of knowledge about her and her worth. These layers of knowledge around the value of the individual includes judgments about her childhood, her socioeconomic status, her drug status, her personal hygiene, and her sexual health. The type of stigma associated with prostitution and experienced by sex workers was captured in a study by Vandenborn, who looked at the experience of sex workers in Malawi. And Vandenborn said, on various occasions I was told and had experienced myself that Malawians, like so many other people in the world, look down upon prostitutes and blame them for the fast spread of AIDS, the killer disease. The second term I briefly want to consider before closing or coming to a conclusion is the term decent work. And although the Law Commission attributes this to the Labour Office, the International Labour Office, this term is inherently problematic because it speaks to a moral assessment. Even if we look at a dictionary definition of the term decent, it means conforming with generally accepted standards of respectful or moral behavior. Decent work, when we say prostitution, or as I've just fallen into my trap, own trap there, sex work is not decent work. We're making a moral decision on this, a subjective decision of this. And to put it bluntly, it is either moral subjectivity and sometimes tied to religious or theological views, which do not have place in this discussion. The idea of your decent work has the effect of saying that, what decent work says or adopts is the idea of the horse stigma, referring to negative image of sex workers because they break social norms associated with appropriate behavior. So what I'm trying to say here is when we look at appropriate, when we look at decent, we're making moral judgments. We're not necessarily looking at the legal grounds on this. In conclusion, Kells would like to call for the rejection of the report and also for the active and meaningful engagement with sex workers, as well as the recognition of the conscious or unconscious biases against sex workers, which should not frame legislation in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You were on time, I was about to say time up. Thank you very much. Let's go to the next presentation. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon to everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. I'm an attorney at SWEST, the newly formed Sex Workers Legal Defense Center, and presenting with me today is Advocate Analda Toy, who is a member of the Cape Bar and who has drafted many reports and legal opinions on this subject thus far. First, I want to introduce the center itself, which is a newly registered law clinic, which is aimed at providing legal advice, legal representation, and strategic impact litigation in the interests of sex workers. It is an arm of SWEST itself. Another goal of the center is to highlight the abuses that sex workers experience through and by collecting data of violations that they experience through the course and scope of their work. Just quickly, the legal center supports the decriminalization of sex work, which means that we support a position that removes the criminal laws and use a rights-based approach to aspects of sex work. We believe that this approach will make sex workers safe, reduce levels of GBV, and have far-reaching impact on public health. I will now hand over to my learned colleague, Advocate Analda Toy.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to make brief submissions on two aspects. The first relates to the report, and the second part of my submissions will relate to specific relevant criminal law, constitutional and criminal law principles. The first general statement that I would like to make is that we have found, through a careful investigation of the report, that there are no signs of support in the report itself for the recommendations made. The discourse about sex work is often governed by these statements of linkages, relationships between A and B, the relationship between sex work and trafficking, the relationship between sex work and drug abuse, and so on. However, what we do not find is often careful investigation of correlation, of what that relationship actually is, and what the direction of the relationship of causality is. Much less do we find clear investigation and data on how criminalization affects that relationship. There seems to me to be a double standard when we look at criminalization. For the proponents of decriminalization, are often asked to explain how is decriminalization going to eradicate these social ills, while at the same time, those questions are not asked about criminalization. We should not forget that the social ills discussed today, trafficking, drug abuse, are happening within the context of full criminalization. Full criminalization of both the sex worker and the buyer since 2007, the sex worker for decades. And we are yet to hear how that criminalization has solved some of the social ills, and how continued criminalization will, in fact, in the future, solve that. So it seems to me that there's an inherent contradiction in the way we look at it, and that inherent contradiction is also evident from the report. I would also like to note that on some of the key issues of the report, if you actually delve into it and look at it from an academic perspective, that some of the findings, such as exploitation, drug abuse, trafficking, these linkages, are based on very few sources. Very few sources, and often a complete ignore, often the report completely ignores opposing views, of which there are many. A specific problem with the report, and I think with some of the submissions today as well, is that we have had any, absolutely no information about how many people are arrested, in fact, in terms of adult sex work, how many are buyers, how many are sex workers. So in essence, we have a recommendation that criminalization must continue, and we don't even know whether that is implemented in practice. How many people are arrested? How many of those arrests actually end in prosecution? In the report, we see reference to Sweden and the fact that over 10 years, less than or a few hundred men have been actually prosecuted in terms of partial decriminalization. We have absolutely no number or information about how many men have actually been arrested and more than that prosecuted. Because what we cannot ignore in this conversation are the realities of criminal law and prosecution. It is incredibly difficult to prosecute these crimes, specifically the buyer crime in terms of Section 11 of SORMA, because what it in fact requires is entrapment in many cases, with which there is a huge constitutional problem in criminal law. Similarly, the report refers to diversion as an alternative for both the first and second option, yet there's no input from the NPA, who will be the gatekeepers of the diversion program. There's also no substantive input from organizations that are currently part of the diversion program, a program with which there are many problems in practice. Finally, on the issue of the report, I would just like to state that one of the sources referred to in the report repeatedly is the Kelly report of 2009. And if you look at that report and its actual suggestions, the commission report did not heed the warning in the last paragraph of that report, in that successful sex work regimes must be evidence-based policy and not policy-based evidence. As to legal issues, we have to remember that Jordan was decided in terms of the interim constitution, and specifically on the basis of discrimination in terms of the interim constitution. There have been significant developments in our law, and specifically around the right to freedom and security of the person. In order to have to arrest someone, to deprive them of their liberty, there must be a good cause in terms of the final constitution, and that good cause must be a legitimate governmental purpose. The law report or law reform commission tells us that that legitimate purpose is the fight of exploitation. Again, we haven't seen any evidence in the report of how that the two relate to each other, because it's not enough that there's a legitimate government purpose, there must also be a rational connection between the arrest and that purpose, and of that we've seen very little evidence. On the issue of morality, I think most legal and criminal legal scholars will agree that morality can never be a legitimate government purpose. I will refer the caucus to Professor Jonathan Birchall and what he writes about it, because I think it's very apt within this context. He says, with regards to criminalization of morality, the problem is more difficult in societies that are culturally and ethnically diverse, so that there does not exist one shared set of beliefs and values, but a diversity of moral and religious beliefs. The question then becomes, even if it is right to enforce morality through the criminal sanction, whose morality is it that is to be enforced? And that is, I think, a central problem or a central question that all involved should think about. Then there's been another important development since Jordan. The Constitutional Court these days adjudicates these matters differently. In Jordan, all the ills that were discussed today were reduced to one sentence in the judgment, and it was referred to, the sentence said something like, the relationship between sex work, drug abuse, trafficking, and so on, are accepted as legislative facts, meaning no evidence required. If Jordan was decided today, that would not be the case. We have had repeated judgments by the Constitutional Court and High Court that said if you want to show rationality and justifying of legislation, that must be in the form of actual evidence, not in the form of argument or policy considerations only. Finally, much has been said today or referred to with regards to issues such as trafficking and specifically child, the involvement of children in sex crimes. The problem that we have is this again, that we know that there are certain relationships, but we have yet to hear what exactly that relationship is and what the causal connection and the direction of causality is. And I would submit that until we do not mix up what today is about, which is adult sex work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In the nick of time. Can we have another presentation by Doctors Without Borders?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, fellow participants. On behalf of Hands for Hearts, Pinion Project, and Stop Trafficking of People, I want to thank you for giving us a chance to respond to the report by the Law Commission. We would like to start off by affirming the report's findings, as well as that of the Constitutional Court, that complete prohibition does not nullify the basic human rights of those caught in prostitution. I refer to this term as prostitution to remain in constant use with what the law, the report from the Law Reform Commission says, so as not to create confusion. This is reflected throughout our submission, and I'd like to highlight on page 2, where the Commission's report noted Robin Fudge, who was a former public prosecutor and senior state advocate, her observation that said, the proposal that prostitution must be non-criminalized to realize various constitutional rights is specious. Specious refers to the fact that at a superficial level it seems relevant, but when you dig deeper you find that it is not so. She argues that the question of the constitutionality of legislative measures to control adult prostitution has already been adjudicated by the Constitutional Court in the Jordan versus State matter. Any suggestion that the current legislative measures should be changed to be brought in line with the Constitution is simply incorrect. We would also like to affirm that based on extensive studies and our own experience, hands-on, you cannot disconnect human trafficking, and particularly sex trafficking, from prostitution. I would like to refer to page 8 of our submission, where we quoted the following from the report that said, this was made by the Islamic Unity Convention, the right to freedom of trade, occupation, and profession does not include, nor can it be extended to prostitution, as that would be nothing but the denial of the right to dignity and the legalization and legitimization of the enslavement of people. To do so would be to maintain and further such enslavement to make it possible. The fact that other countries, for example, Western countries, have done so is no criteria for a young African country trying to heal after more than 300 years of oppression of the indigenous population, especially its women. Prostitution is interwoven with the various criminal activities that are inherent to the legal environment with which it flourishes. So it happens in many spaces, but where it flourishes is where we are most concerned of it taking place. To assume that it can be considered and regulated in isolation from these activities would seem to be naive, especially in light of our current socioeconomic makeup. Having said this, we believe that we could all agree on the following. The sale of sexual services for reward is the result of a choice made in severely limiting socioeconomic circumstances and in a context of social inequality like we have said before, family breakdown, sexual abuse, rape, poverty. It is fair to say that there's not really a choice at all, and that many choose to do what they have to do to survive in those situations. We can also agree on that people who sell sexual services for reward are vulnerable and experience harm, which transcends ideological ideas. And this would include the consideration that at the point of sale, the client, who is creating the demand, often has the final say to whether protection is used and whether violence is part of their interaction. In light of this, it would seem wise to admit that we have a problem, one containing complexities that we feel we are still coming to grips with. Pushing through a decriminalization, or in other words, the total legalization of all aspects of prostitution, with no restrictions at all, the extreme, no-holds-barred version, which would include pimping, recruiting, grooming, brothel-keeping, advertising, and basically the sale of vulnerable people as commodities, becomes permissible by law. This in itself would not assist in solving the problem, but would simply hide it behind a wall of what is then called legal work. Pimps would become legal business managers. And to then think that now the sex worker would be able to exercise her legal rights against these very people who are now enabled by the law to continue exploiting her would again seem to be naive. The most sensible route would be instead for government and civil society to join forces and concentrate efforts on developing a national strategy, outlining the role of each stakeholder that will counteract the vulnerabilities and exploitation that are part and parcel of prostitution, because you can't detach prostitution from its demand. It is the reason for which it exists. You can't detach prostitution from violence and abuse. This is inherent to it. And you can't detach sex trafficking from prostitution. If we say that exploitation is wrong, yet we have exceptions to this rule in certain situations, we are saying that it is okay to exploit certain people in certain situations. This could be understood as saying that certain people are good for it, and we feel that that is wrong. We would find that this would be especially conflicting when working to prevent human trafficking by educating children and youth, because we are sending a clear message to teach them that exploitation is wrong. If now there are mixed messages because of what is being dictated by the law and saying that doing certain things to certain people in certain instances is an exploitation, but in others it is, we are sending a mixed message. The Packers Act, in its name, in itself, requires that we prevent and combat human trafficking. Prevention means combating the vulnerabilities that are causing the problem to exist. We believe that all men and women have the right to non-exploitative work and to earn a livelihood in a non-exploitative manner. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You are left with 2 minutes. Can we have another presentation by CJ?
Thank you, Chair. Can I do it from here?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, honourable members. I'm with colleagues from the Commission for Gender Equality, led by the chairperson seated behind me, and our head of legal next to me. As everybody will be aware, the Commission for Gender Equality is a constitutional body that has been put in place to support democracy. In a nutshell. And Chair, I'm not going to go into our mandate. I think Section 187 of the Constitution is very clear in terms of our mandate as the Commission, as well as further work that we need to do as contained in the CGEF. But Chair, I would just like to highlight that we as the Commission for Gender Equality, and in line with our own position, we are going to use the term sex work, because we have had engagements with sex workers themselves, and we have had quite a number of processes and engagements with COSATU and other movements within the work or unions and therefore will term it sex work. Sex work in South Africa forms part of a vulnerable class by its nature of the work that has been done and are subjected to potential exploitation, abuse and assault on their dignity. The dignity vests in every person. The right that to dignity, as we all know, vests in every person, including even criminals. Similarly, sex workers do not forfeit their rights under the Constitution and are therefore entitled, as all in our country now, to be able to assert those particular rights, including the right to dignity, the right not to be subjected to cruel, inhumane, or degrading punishment. And this was also highlighted very well in the Kylie matter that was in the CCMA. I hear a lot of people also are talking about the Jordan case. The Jordan case, S versus Jordan, the 2000 case matter. We as the commission are not going to get too much into it because as far as we are concerned, that judgment did not take a lot of context into regard, and it never really had an in-depth discussion as far as the law and human rights violations are concerned. And therefore, from that basis, we are not really going to look into that. In 2013, as the Commission for Gender Equality, we launched our own official position paper after having engaged with various stakeholders within this particular sector, and then we called for decriminalization. We also, just as the paper highlights from the South African Law Reform Commission, have done quite a number of investigations or specific complaints that were lodged with the Commission as far as allegations of human rights violations by the South African police services is concerned. So I will also touch on that right at the end, just to give a sense of what are the challenges and what are the issues that and why we then on that basis think that it's better that we follow decriminalization as a route. When we do our work as the Commission for Gender Equality, we follow what we call a human rights-based approach. And if you look into what the human rights-based approach is, it's got specific characteristics. We've got rights which are universal, which are inalienable, interrelated, interdependent, and are indivisible. And on that basis, when we look at universality of human rights, it's where human rights are universal regardless of political, economic, cultural, any other system that is in place. So that's the first point. Human rights are inalienable. Human rights are inherent in all persons and cannot be alienated from an individual or a group except with due process that is in specific situations. They are interrelated. Improvement in the realization of any one human right is a function of the realization of the other human rights. They are interdependent. Human rights are interdependent as the level of enjoyment of any one right is dependent on the level of realization of other rights. And they are indivisible. All civil, cultural, economic, political, and social rights are equally important. Improving the enjoyment of any right cannot be at the expense of the realization of any other right. And the scope of what the state needs to look into on human rights obligations, the first pillar is respect, protect, and be able to fulfill. States must be able to refrain from interfering with enjoyment of human rights, that's the first thing. States must prevent private actors or third parties from violating human rights. And states must take positive measures, including adopting appropriate legislation, policies, and programs to ensure the realization of human rights. So those are specific things that we wanted to be able to put forward. right up front. If you look into our position as the Commission, part of what we have looked into is also international law and obviously the South African Constitution. And those provide a legal basis for decriminalization stance that we have taken as the Commission. And I think this as well, when you look into the paper that was done by the South African Human Rights Law Reform Commission in the discussion paper of 2009, they kind of agreed to this particular aspect in the sense that, I quote, they indicated that the current legal position of prostitution is in need of a comprehensive review. It is clear that South Africa's international obligations to realize various rights such as dignity, security of the person, equality and equal access to the law and access to health care, as well as to provide effective remedies for violations of rights, must inform decisions of the legislature. That's the paper for human SALRC, the 2009 document. And as such, and I'm not going to touch into quite a number of international law that we have also looked into, because I think many of the speakers today have highlighted some of these, whether you're looking at CEDAW, you're looking at Beijing, Vienna Declaration and all that. I am really not going to get into all that at this stage. But safe to say, Chair, that when you look at our national law, and despite the constitutional imperative, sex workers are still abused and harassed by police officers, because the South African law criminalizes sex work in that it is accepted by our law that both the sex worker and the client commit an offense, though it is tried that it is difficult to prosecute. And I think there was a question that was raised earlier on specifically to the South African law reform in them, perhaps because their paper does not highlight any work or any imprisonment, jail and all that, or the processes that have been undertaken as far as the current criminalization process is concerned. But what we know, though, is currently with criminalization, we still have unlawful arrests of sex workers happening. We still have physical violence perpetrated on them by clients in South African by their clients or SAPS members. They still enjoy theft of their earnings and valuables by the SAPS. There's still stigmatization that happens that then prevents them from seeking protection from law enforcement agencies when their rights are being infringed. Criminalization seeks to eliminate sex work by those, when we look at it, that are opposed to it on the basis of moral, religious, and sexist grounds. There isn't anything from human rights perspective that we see supporting any other position other than decriminalization. And so as the Commission, we received a complaint of sex workers that were being abused by police, and we conducted an in-depth investigation which also included sourcing information from the complainants themselves as well as SAPS, of course. In our work, we found that the South African police services utilize municipal bylaws to unlawfully arrest and detain sex workers. In the current antagonistic legal framework, the CGE is limited in its ambit to provide the solution to the current violation of sex workers. I think if you look at it really was a difficult process that we have had to go through in even trying to get information, because the same sex workers, due to the fact that they know they will be violated, they are not able to really come forward and give information. you know, in such a way that you can say, there's the police, you take her to the police station and able to then say, this is the specific person, this is what happened, and all that. So in terms of the current legislative environment, it is really difficult for us even to do the investigation. I know that part of what the paper says is that we should be investigating those human rights abuses. We will continue, but we can tell you now, they will still come to the same conclusion that we are seeing now. So it's actually not going to be helpful unless we do look at some changes that needs to be done. And I will move to conclude, Chair. Criminalization of sex work is contrary to international law, and it unfairly infringes upon fundamental rights that are enshrined in the Bill of Rights. The existing legal framework, which makes all aspects of sex work unlawful, contributes to gender-based violence that is perpetrated on sex workers and the health care and other social risks and issues that have been highlighted by previous speakers. There is sufficient information to support the fact that sex workers face considerable violence and abuse, and this is not only unlawful, but it also is unacceptable from where we are viewing. And Chair, we submit to this House that this is not the first time that as a country we actually look into matters that border around human rights as well as moral arguments and or religious arguments. We have had those particular engagements whether we were looking at the choice of termination, as was highlighted previously. One can also even highlight and look at other matters such as the death penalty. We have been here, and in all those matters, as a country, we decided that the way to go is to follow human rights approach. And therefore, we find it difficult as the Commission for Gender Equality that at this stage, we are sitting here, but instead of looking into basic human rights and following the basic human rights approaches that we have been doing in other matters, that we are looking into a whole lot of other issues and a whole lot of other arguments that have been put before. We therefore think it's the most appropriate approach as the Commission that decriminalization of sex work should actually be the way forward for the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is Shinita Beck?
Is she around?
Okay. I think that concludes my chairing. Siminya will chair. Thank you very much. Should I continue? All right. They said you need, I think, further work presented earlier on, so we continue. Let's go to the next time. Triangular project is they, are they back? Because they were not here when I announced, so we can skip past that. Amnesty International, you can present them, unless if you want to use the project. You can see it. Okay.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, honourable members of Parliament and organisations and individuals here, thank you very much for the opportunity to make this submission today. My name is Louise Carmody. I am a researcher and I'm representing Amnesty International South Africa. Amnesty International recognised the important role of members of Parliament in deciding how best South Africa can respond to the numerous challenges that are linked to sex work, and we commend the Multi-Party Women's Caucus for organising this summit today. We stress that it's really vital that development of policy and legislation initiatives to respond to sex work take a human rights-based approach, one that is informed by the best available evidence and which includes the participation of sex workers in the process. Amnesty International South Africa is a registered public benefit organisation based in Johannesburg. Our Members are part of over 7 million people worldwide who campaign for a world where human rights are enjoyed by all. We're independent of any government, any political ideology, any economic interest or religion. As a human rights organisation, Amnesty International investigates and regularly makes recommendations in relation to human rights abuses and how they can be prevented. Our recommendations are based on our own independent research and are aligned with international human rights laws and standards. Our research globally and in South Africa has found that all forms of criminalisation of sex work result in disproportionate harm to sex workers. As an organisation, we've developed an institutional policy that supports the decriminalisation of sex work, and this has been a process informed by over 2 years of research and consultation with a broad number of organisations, including those who support criminalisation and those who do not. When Amnesty International refers to sex work, we mean the exchange of sexual services between consenting adults for some form of remuneration, with the terms agreed between the seller and the buyer, that does not involve any coercion, exploitation and abuse. It's important to clarify, as with all organisations here, that Amnesty International calls for robust responses to prevent and prosecute trafficking and sexual exploitation of children, both of which are recognised as grave human rights violations. In that context, Amnesty International disagrees with the South African Law Reform Commission's recommendations in relation to their report on adult prostitution. I'll briefly just quickly talk about three key concerns. The first one is that criminalisation of sex work risks a number of human rights abuses. The second is the alternative proposal put forward in relation to partial criminalisation, which also risks a large range of human rights abuses. And the third is a concern in relation to the conflation of trafficking and sex work within the report. We'd also briefly note our concern that the length of the report, being over 500 pages, makes it really inaccessible for many people to engage and respond to the Law Reform Commission's recommendations. And also our concern that it does not refer to the latest evidence from health or human rights experts, and often fails to put forward clear basis for the positions that it takes. Also that there seems to be an over-reliance on statements put forward as fact from very few organisations and those which support criminalisation. However, firstly, I just would like to talk to the key concern from within our submission, which is that criminalisation of sex work risks violating a number of human rights. The South African Law Reform Commission report accepts that sex workers are at high risk of human rights violation. However, the Commission suggests these could be addressed without changes to the legislative framework and recommends strengthening redress mechanisms, including through the Equality Court, Chapter 9 institutions, and improved public service delivery in relation to police and healthcare. Amnesty International disagrees with these findings. Amnesty International has consistently documented that sex workers are at particularly high rates of human rights violations, something which fits with the presentations that's been put forward to you today. Amnesty South Africa has found that state responses to sex work that seek to criminalise or penalise those involved actually disempower sex workers, entrench stigma, discrimination and social inequalities, and support a culture for impunity for human rights abuses against sex workers. Our research shows that laws should be redirected towards making sex workers' lives safer by ensuring access of everybody to human rights. That states should rather combat all forms of discrimination and gender inequality and investigate and prosecute all instances of human trafficking and ensure remedy. We've seen and heard that groups most affected by discrimination and inequality are frequently overrepresented in sex work, including women and sex workers who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender or intersex. And indeed, this intersection of marginalisation links with barriers to other rights, including education, housing and health services. In focusing on criminalising sex work, the South African Law Reform Commission has failed to sufficiently recognise South Africa's obligation to address the underlying socio-economic reasons behind sex work, and the need, such as the need for alternative employment options or improved rates of pay. And indeed, their recommendations create another barrier for sex workers to realise their human rights. We're concerned by the narrow focus on criminalisation within the report, as it not only compounds marginalisation of people in sex work, but actually forces them to sell sex in clandestine and dangerous conditions, while at the same time limits their access to justice and stigmatises and punishes them for their decisions. We also advocate for a human rights-based approach, and one of those key cornerstones is the right to participation, which calls for people to participate in how decisions are made regarding policies and protection of their rights. Amnesty International, through our global and research and indeed consultation in South Africa, has often found that the voices of sex workers are frequently obscured or silenced as a result of the marginalisation they experience and those who oppose the sale and purchase of sex. And this is despite the fact that sex workers are best placed to help define the most appropriate mechanisms to maximise their own welfare and security. And it's very unfortunate that the South African Law Reform Commission report is yet another example. Even in cases where choices may be limited by structural inequalities, it's important to recognise that sex workers have the capacity to make decisions. In their report, the South African Law Reform Commission cites the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, the CEDAW Convention, and specifically the obligation on state parties to suppress the exploitation of prostitution of women under Article 6 in the Convention. They cite this to support their claim that sex work is inherently exploitative. However, this reliance is misplaced, and actually the language used in that Article 6 from CEDAW indicates specifically that the drafters of the convention acknowledge that not all instances of sex work are inherently exploitative or constitute a violation of women's rights. And indeed, maybe it's helpful to know that when that convention was being drafted, there were calls for the abolition of prostitution in all forms, which were rejected. Indeed, human rights bodies, experts, and instruments increasingly recognise that individuals have the capacity to consent to sell sex, and that includes a special rapporteur on violence against women, its causes and consequences, the Office of the High Commission on Human Rights, and the CEDAW Committee itself. Indeed, many of the South African Law Reform Commission's findings and recommendations within the report are based on the premise that decriminalising sex work would result in increased rates of gender inequality and gender-based violence. Amnesty International disagrees with this reasoning. Our research has found that criminalising sex work actually compounds and perpetuates gender inequality. Women who sell sex are frequently subjected to harmful gender stereotypes and abuse as a result of being perceived to transgress traditional notions of what is acceptable sexual behaviour for women. Arguably, the South African Law Reform Commission's view that diminishes sex workers' agency is another example of one such stereotype. It also fails to sufficiently highlight the negative impact of criminalisation on access to justice for survivors of sexual violence. The South African Law Reform report fails to acknowledge the significant guidance that this decriminalisation is a vital step towards protecting sex workers from discrimination and marginalisation, including from the CEDAW Committee and from the South African Commission for Gender Equality, as we just heard.
2 minutes.
Thank you. I would briefly just like to reference the recommendation as an alternative that the South African Law Reform Commission put forward for partial criminalisation. We've raised some serious concerns in that regard. Our findings have found from research conducted in countries including Norway, where they have taken a similar approach, is that whatever their intentions, laws that criminalise the purchase of sex actually place sex workers at greater risk. Just to conclude, we recommend that the South African government fully decriminalise sex work as a starting point for preventing and addressing human rights violations against sex workers. And for further information, I've brought some copies of the research, including the report from Norway, Crushing the Market, which highlights the serious serious human rights violations that have resulted in Norway from the partial criminalisation model. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to SWAT Legal Defense Center.
Good all protocols are met. I was tasked with the huge responsibility of representing my organization, the Sex Workers Education and Advocacy Task Force. But then with sitting here as well, I think that I'm failing sex workers who represent more than 96% of the organization when I do not talk about our agency. Many people will say that organizations speak on behalf of sex workers. At SWET, we do not do that. At SWET, like I said, 96% of sex workers work there. And this has impact on how this report was also dealt with and why we are dissatisfied about the report. Besides to highlight the points that many of our allies have actually pointed out on why the report is not a good reflection of what the country needs or a good reflection of the kind of research that we currently have out there, I'm going to go into what sex workers that are saying sex workers work see partial decriminalization will do to them. It will push sex workers further to the background. It will make it hard for sex workers to access health care. Sex workers will then become the profiling point for police officers in their plight for wanting to get to the client who will be criminalized. Many will say, how, if we have partial decriminalization, then how are we addressing the gender inequality by making one criminalized and the other not? Right now we currently have full criminalization for the client and for the sex worker. And unfortunately, that has not worked. Instead, clients are still not getting arrested. Sex workers are getting arrested. But if you're looking at partial decriminalization, you're going to have the same very thing. Because in order for the client to get arrested, it means that a sex worker must be followed until she actually gets a client. With that said, it makes no sense that one should actually criminalize the seller, as a wise woman once said, of a tomato, and not should uncriminalize the seller of the tomato and then criminalize the buyer of the tomato. Who is this person going to stand and sell to? How are you giving this person economic freedom? If you're going to say that the buyer of the tomato cannot access the tomato, it makes no sense at all. On speaking on deviation programs, it's not viable for many reasons. As sex workers, we're not a group that is one person with one interest, with one idea of where we want to get to in life. So you cannot say you're going to give us deviation programs and bring us the same kind of programs. In South Africa, we have a very high rate of unemployment. So unless you're saying DSD must find another budget to make sure that every sex worker, if you wanted to be a doctor as a kid, you become a doctor. But then how unequal is it to the ones that are sitting in the townships without that opportunity? We do admit limited choices. Yes, people got any limited choices, but they still made their choice. People could have been domestic workers. They did not become domestic workers. People could have been waitresses like myself, but worked in waitressing and realized that the money was not enough. Because at the end of the day, things are expensive. You need a little bit more every month. It is a choice. And people choose that one option over the many that are out there. Then I think it should be recognized by government that some people are saying, leave me in my choice. If somebody wants to step out, then yes, do provide support. But do not take away the other person's agency while you're trying to protect the other ones. Let us all have fair opportunities. we all want to be protected by our constitution. So sex workers, there are sex workers who are saying we want out. There are sex workers who are saying that yes, we want to stay. Please recognize that there is actually a lot who actually say that we want to stay. I'm a member of SISOC, which has 1,500 sex workers in the country, and accesses more during their creative spaces, which is a space where we meet together. But a lot of other sex workers cannot actually stand up and say, I want to join and become a SISOC member, because criminality means that a child can be taken away from you. So by joining SISOC, you need to have a lot of courage, just like the courage that you had when you went to the corner and decided to be a sex worker. When you decided that I'm going to put my foot on top of the table without considering how controversial it is, because what's more important is that people get by in this household. It's the same courage. And me sitting here and telling the whole world that I'm a sex worker is not, it should not be taken lightly as well. Because for me as well, it's still scary. I can still walk out of here. Like, I think I had a conversation with Mr. John Jeffries, who was like, but how are you going to even practice law? And I was like, give me expansion. He said, you will have to not be arrested for 10 years for us to be able to actually expand you or give you a presidential pardon. I looked at my track record of how many times I've actually gotten arrested in Port Rica as well and gotten fines. I'll have to wait another 10 years from now, 2018. Which means I'm never going to practice. So do not give us things, options that are not going to actually repel the current laws or make environments that are enabling for sex workers. But give us full decriminalization, because full decriminalization can make us access all of these things on top of labor rights. That's all we ask people. To be seen as workers, because we are workers, because work is when you decide that you're not going to wait for handovers. But you walk into an employment situation or where you are able to earn work, and that's all we are doing. We are earning and living to provide for our families. Yes, there are dangers, but there's dangers in mining as well. I think if you go to the townships that we have right now, there was a rise in nursing colleges a few years back. I think if you were to ask most of those people who did nursing at that time, was this your choice? They would say no. Because at the end of the day, we're in survival mode. And employment is all capitalism. We can never fight that. All work is exploitative. But give us the choice to get into this work willingly, knowingly, and say we choose it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to the next presentation. Embrace Dignity.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, fellow participants. Embrace Dignity challenges power inequalities based on gender, class, and race that lead to the oppression of vulnerable people through the prostitution system, sexual exploitation, and sexual abuse. We are committed to addressing the root causes of prostitution. I'm here making the presentation supported by a survivor of the sex trade, Sylvia Haku, who's going to support me in my presentation. Our rationale as Embrace Dignity is that we believe the prostitution system is inherently exploitative, invariably damaging, inextricably linked to the ubiquitous problem of violence against women and children, and human trafficking in a society that is essentially patriarchal. We have international obligations as a country, and one of these is CEDAW. Article 6 of CEDAW states, and I quote, parties shall take all appropriate measures, including legislation, to suppress all forms of trafficking in women and exploitation of prostitution of women. Prostitution violates human rights. As I've said earlier, it's inherently harmful and exploitative, exploits the position of vulnerability caused by economic and gender inequality, undermines rights to dignity and equality, treats people as commodities to be bought and sold, thrives on men's feeling of entitlement to women's bodies. On language, a lot has been said in this house about language. At Embrace Dignity, we refer to the prostitution system, a system that exploits women in particular and cannot be termed decent work. The term sex work was coined recently by the sex industry to normalize the system of prostitution and mask its harms. And sitting here in this chamber, where Verwoerd was murdered, I'm reminded of how, under apartheid, apartheid was termed separate development by Verwoerd, or even good neighborliness in order to hide its harms. The sex work lobby used the term sex work to include prostituted people as well as pimps and brothel owners and employees. Embrace Dignity works with survivors of the sex trade. The survivors at Embrace Dignity prefer the term sister to prostitute or sex worker. They could be your sisters. We are happy to respond to the South African Law Reform Commission report because it is an important, this summit here is an important part of public engagement, which the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services calls for. However, we've raised our concerns that the multi-party women's caucus may be biased and may not be the most appropriate body to undertake such public engagement. And we say this because in its public statements, the Multi-Party Women's Caucus has said it already has a position of total decriminalization of what they call sex work. And early this morning, I requested copies of the resolutions of the Multi-Party Women's Caucus. Now late in the evening, I still haven't been offered these resolutions. I want to tell this House that at Embrace Dignity, we've been asking for these resolutions since last year. And every time we are referred from one person to the other, the latest this morning is the secretary of the committee referred me to the content advisor. I still haven't seen this resolution, including the ANC resolution, which I've been informed by the ANC is not public yet. So we don't know how this committee can reference the ANC resolution when that resolution is not public. So we await the resolution of the ANC so that we can quote from the written text and not from what we are told it says. Embrace Dignity welcomes the report as a good starting point for public engagement. We appreciate the effort to review fragmented legislative framework currently regulating adult prostitution and to bring this in line with the South African Constitution and international human rights law. I've heard learned people here quote the very international laws that I'm talking about. So we're going to need somebody who's going to dissect these laws because it looks like people can use them as they choose. So this is going to be a task for the Department of Justice to tell us and interpret these international laws. As the law currently stands, all aspects of adult prostitution are criminalized, including the buying of sex and brothel keeping. And I just want to say that we have said that we have not indeed seen any man being prosecuted for buying sex. And this is a problem. It actually shows there is no political will. We would like the Department of Justice to tell us why it has been difficult to arrest these men. France, after 1 year of passing the law, arrested over 1,000 men. and we look forward to seeing how France is going to deal with this issue. 1,000 in 1 year men were arrested in France. And the problem is that we have no comprehensive policy in this country to deal with prostitution, as the Commission has told us, and there is no political will to implement the law. Law reform process seeks to identify alternative policies, and we appreciate this. And it says very specifically, and if you prefer total decriminalization, tell us how it's going to regulate, prevent, deter, or reduce prostitution. So far from what I've heard, I've not heard anyone tell us how total decriminalization is going to do all of those things. Especially in the context, South African context, of high levels of poverty, unemployment, and inequality, which are exacerbated by high levels of gender-based violence and HIV and AIDS. The report acknowledges these structural factors which create vulnerability to exploitation and abuse, and therefore recommends two legal options. And as you've already heard, total criminalization, which is continuation of the status quo with diversion. But coming back to policy, we want to say that we want a policy on the system of prostitution.
2 minutes.
Beg your pardon?
2 minutes.
Oh, okay. That will fundamentally and holistically address underlying causes. For us, this is an important part. We want to correct a system that will correct structural imbalances that drive prostitution so that we can prevent new entry. So the law that we want, working with survivors of the sex trade, our local and international partners, and flowing from our constitution, we want the Minister of Justice to table a modified version of option one in the South African Law Reform Commission report, which removes all criminality from those selling sex and supports their exit. Partial decriminalization or the equality law is the law that we want, and the French model is the best example, which I've referred to earlier. Just as I go towards the end, you've heard others say what is wrong with total criminalization. You've heard others also tell you that we need a law that's going to support exit. Non-criminalization and legalization, which is what some others are calling for. I want to say here that the New Zealand example is a failed experiment. No other country has followed New Zealand. Why? Since 2002, when they passed the law, no other country, and now they want South Africa to be that country. And yet, the equality law that we speak about has been followed by very many countries. Now I hand over to Sylvia.
Good afternoon.
Your time is up. Can we allow the next presentation? Chris Sylvia. I asked Chris to
hear
the other time.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Thank you. I just want to say, Madam Chair, members of the Parliament and everybody else here today, thank you for this opportunity. This is really a privilege and an honour to be heard today. Crystal Clear Ministries International supports the law as it currently is. We believe adult prostitution should remain criminalised. And we just feel there are too many facts and factors that cannot be ignored. I think we've heard them all, mostly. The impact personally, physically, mentally, emotionally and psychologically for the prostitute as well as for those who have children. As well as for the country, and that I think we must face and deal with those instead of just trying to find the easy way out and just to say, let's just decriminalise this. Because we do not believe that is the answer. We believe supporting decriminalisation is for us to say like that the prostitute's life is worth nothing and it's worth less than mine. We believe that we then say that I want my children to grow up with a good house and a good support system and a good future, but we actually don't care about theirs and we don't care about their abuse and their lifestyle, and that is not true. That is why we cannot support it. We don't believe prostitution is really a free choice. I think that has come up with other people as well. We feel that it's more a choice force because of a lack of education, a lack of job opportunities, and therefore they are currently breaking the law all the time just because of what they have to do because they feel there's no other way out. So I feel there's more things that we can work on to give them those choices so that they don't have to feel that this is the only choice they have. Researchers have found substantial evidence that there's a strong co-occurrence between prostitution, drug use, drug selling and involvement in non-drug related crimes, particularly property crime and prostitution and related crimes, therefore, adds to our already strained police force, which we already know they cannot even get to what we have to deal with at the moment. Despite the romantic notion entertained in some quarters that everything will be well just if prostitution is, the criminal law is removed, the practical truth is that it will not. All the opportunities for other related crimes, abuse and exploitation will still remain. We believe that a law should be written with a similar and fair sentence on both sides, because somebody has also brought it up. We do not believe that you can criminalize and you can arrest the prostitute, but the buyer can just walk away. We do not feel that is right. So we do feel that full criminalization with diversion programs to exit the lifestyle is the solution. And there are other people that, like Marjorie from Startback and also others that support this and give the opportunity for those changes to be done. One woman said in an interview, one of the prostitutes says, only my head belongs to me now. My body is left on the street. I don't think anybody should feel like that. Some go through experiences that may result in lasting feelings of worthlessness, shame and self-hatred. And the lack of a healthy relationship can lead to higher divorce rates and the breakdown of family in our country that is already quite high. We feel that prostitution is degrading to women and even to men, and it is conducive to violent abuse of the prostitute, both to the customer and to the pimp. It is associated with and encouraged international trafficking in women, which we've also heard from today. Unfortunately, a lot of the prostitutes, the Johns, as they call them, they believe that a prostitute do not have the right to say no. And anybody has got the right to say no. Any woman and any man has got the right to say no. So basically, they are taking their human rights away. Human rights keep coming up quite a few times, and we actually believe that human rights are being used through tainted glasses. Those who say prostitution is the human right want to simultaneously take the right away from the buyer to buy them. So either it is a right or it's not a right. And also we know that everybody has got a human right, whether you are in prostitution or whether you do any other job, we all have the same human rights. So you don't have to decriminalize prostitution to get your human rights. You have your human rights standard as it is. People have also referred to the Constitution, and what I would like to know is, what is decent about being abused? I don't think any of us would like our anybody that we know or our children or our friends or our family would like to be abused just to say that you've got your human rights. Prostitution has been condemned internationally as a single form of human rights abuse, an attack on the dignity and the worth of human beings. We're talking about criminal records, and it has been brought up. What I'd like to say is there was a study done in five different countries, and South Africa was one of them. And it came up that, you know what, the criminal, the fact that they've got a criminal record stand against them to be able to find different work. The end of the day is South Africa was one of the countries that came up that was not really the reason, because South Africa was one of the countries with the lowest acknowledgement that they actually did want to exit prostitution. And then my question is this is, we also do prison ministry. So if we start taking people's criminal records away, how long will it take for everybody in the prisons to say, if theirs can be taken away, so can mine?
which means what will we end up with? We'll end up with a lawless country, because nobody will have a criminal record anymore. And if anybody does get caught for any criminal offence, there will be a first-time criminal offender. Instead of getting harsher sentences, they will get a light sentence because everybody will think they have never broken the law before, which means we will just make our country worse instead of better. Yes, I do understand that they say it's harder to find work when you do have a criminal record, but we have somebody that's an offender that went and he did some courses while he was incarcerated, and he, Fani, the ex-offender Fani Mangyani, he bettered himself while incarcerated, and he explained how the other training that he did while he was incarcerated helped him to move from an offender to a facilitator in a mining company after he left the prison. New Zealand is always brought up, and New Zealand we know has failed, because after the last review, law review, the 7 years, the violence, the sexual abuse, everything has just increased. The prostitutes still do not trust the police. They still do not report anything that happens against them because they still do not have that trust. It also increased the ethnic minority children that was trafficked. We have our own minority in our country. Do we really think our children need that? We have a lot of seamless connections between the trafficking, the prostitution ring, all the drugs, the money laundering, the fraud, and everything. It was even in 2017 South Africa, made in the Times Life, which brought up all those connections, which means we are not helping, we are hurting the country, which we would like to just introduce as an idea. The Dream Center network in New York have got a vision and a mission to do exactly what we're trying to solve in our country. So the Dream Center, and anybody can go and Google them, they have got brilliant exit programs. They teach and train prostitutes, abused women and children to find skills, to get skills, to be trained, to find and to exit the current situation they are in, so that they can actually also get a better job out there and feel like they are worth more than what they currently feel they are doing. We had...
your turn, Lisa.
I just want to say one last thing, madam. There was Annie Lobert in London that was a 16-year prostitute. She exited and she started helping people to exit. There was a lady that she started Hookers for Jesus. There was another lady that wrote a book, our own South African that wrote the book Exit. So there are ways to make things. We just need to give them the opportunities, we need to give them the training, we need to give them different choices so that they can take a different lifestyle. And then we're in support of that. Thank you, madam.
Thank you very much. Can I have hands that want to get clarity on the presentation? The other side here, there's only one hand. Thank you very much, Honorable Stone.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for everybody who presented. Firstly, I just want to say, Chairperson, that the Women's Caucus is the right organ to deal with this space, with these things, because it comprises of members of parliament. And people who make the law in this country according to the constitution are members of parliament. So I think this is the right body to deal with this. Secondly, I've listened to all the presenters. Those who do not like decriminalization, they tell us about somebody in some place. All of them, they don't say I am. But all those who presented in favor of decriminalization, they say, look at me, I am what? So I think, I'm not a lawyer and I don't have medical background, but I come from the finance and economic sector. But I think for every demand, there is supply. The people who exist as sex workers, they exist because there is a body of people who want to use that service. So I don't want us to cloud this up by bringing about it is conducive to breaking of families. Many families, there are many divorces in South Africa without sex workers. I also don't want the word prostitution because to me it is not very polite. I think let's stick to the word sex workers. Let's be respectful. We are all women here. We mustn't look down upon other women. And I also had mention of trafficking. Many people are trafficked, even men, to go and work, build houses, not for sex. So we must not cloud up these issues. You know, as lawmakers, we've got to deal with the issue that is on the table. The issue is, people are asking us to decriminalize sex work. They didn't say lump up trafficking. They didn't say that. I didn't hear them say. They didn't say include divorces. They didn't say that. So let's deal with one issue. We'll deal with the rest later on. Thank you.
Honorable Menti.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's on the same point Umama has raised. I would like crystal clear to unpack their statement when they are adding issues which support a status quo by supporting it through saying issue decriminalization of sex work will add to money laundering, to fraud, all these things that we're mentioning. How are they related to a right? Can they clarify us? How is money laundering, fraud, and all those things related to a right? Because we are talking on an issue of a right to access safe sex work. So I just want that gray area.
Okay, if I do understand.
I'm cheering.
I don't know.
I'm cheering, ma'am. I need to give you a chance to speak.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you very much.
If I understand.
I'm still giving other members and then you can answer me. Yes. You can switch off your mic, put your points down, and then at the right time you'll answer. Thank you very much. Honorable Simi.
Thanks, Chair. As a member of the steering committee, I think we should clarify one point. There's no decision of the multi-party caucus on this issue. That's why we held this public hearing. We will circulate the statement that has been out sent out on behalf of the committee by the chair and the media license officer. So we've not taken any decision, and that's why we've called this meeting and would still call other meeting if we still feel that we need to have engagement with other people after this meeting. So I just want to inform participants that we are still engaging with the issues. We have not reached a level of any decision, and it's our right as members of parliament to deal with these matters, and we will present our report to the parliament at the right time. So we just wanted to clear that. Thank you very much.
Honorable Tati.
Thank you.
Those that are talking to the issue in terms of decriminalisation, I just wanted your comment in terms of, like with adult pornography, people want to often focus on child pornography in terms of protecting children, but actually adult pornography and what that pornography does to adults that put those children at risk. So in terms of the prostitution and what it does to the children in those families and those communities and that kind of thing, so the impact and what kind of impact assessment has been done on the lives of those children that are impacted there. Just also the idea that it could be harder to prove that sex was not consented to if it's legalized. So there's a lot around that, and I just wondered if you'd applied your mind to that. And the other thing about crime statistics in countries where sex work has been decriminalized, because the murders, the crimes, the death, the violence associated with that line of work, the decriminalization, as far as information that I've had access to, has not made that better, in fact made it worse. So just what your experience is in terms of what you found out. Thank you.
Honorable Doc, thank you very much. I would like to refer to the speaker there, and then to make her aware of the fact that in every research that we undertake, there's always a section of limitation of one's work. Limitation of one's work, which means I have done research, but if the same research can be repeated by a different researcher, this might be impact on the findings that I have, which I didn't in actual fact hear. And secondly, the relevance of the case studies as done from the international, the London and to whatever the place that have been mentioned, sometimes cannot be applicable nor relevant to the South African complex situation. And we would like to hear more of that, to say if one can repeat this experiment, then this might be the result thereof. So I just need an explanation on that. Thank you very much.
Are there any more hands for clarity? Ma'am. Ma'am Crystal, please.
Thank you, ma'am. Basically what Member of Parliament Sherilyn Dudley has explained is basically what I was actually brought forward as well. When I was asked, but what is the relevance, because I do know that we are obviously talking about the adult prostitution, and that is the relevance that I have put the linkage, the seamless connections between the prostitution and the money laundering and the trafficking, and just basically that also answers the last question, which brings it back to South Africa, because I do understand some of the suggestions or the ideas that I brought forward was from other countries, but the last one was in August 2017 in South Africa, where the arrest and trafficking of the prostitution ring was made, and that was in the Times Live, where Michael de Oliveira handed himself over to the police, and his co-accused was arrested during a Hawks Operation Madam in Cape Town. Then Chantal Bridger and five others were arrested and charged with racketeering, human trafficking, extortion, car theft, robbery, fraud and money laundering. Among the accused were also those who were accused for murdering Bruno Bron, the owner of the Bronx nightclub in Sea Point. This was all accused in keeping with the sex workers on a drug regime and the using of physical violence. So that's how that all comes together in our country as a point of reference. Madam, thank you.
Person, I happen to be the chairperson of the Rural Women's Development Foundation, and you know they are so worried about some of the things that children look at on TV, the bold and beautiful. They actually call that prostitution, because you find a father-in-law sleeping with a daughter-in-law, and I thought one of the
honorable presenters would talk about that, because that is serious prostitution in our culture.
I didn't see you, Honorable Jackson.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to refer, I think it's Sisonke and Sweat. They told us about statistics. I think if you want to have an informed position, it's about time that you talk about statistics. We need to know exactly how many people are we talking about. I think one said we are 1,500, and the other organization as well, they said they are 1,500. So if we could have that, so that when we conclude, after we have done all the present, what is it? What after we have done submissions for all the organizations that are to be represented, we can have an informed decision. But that's one. And I don't hear in any of the organizations that have presented here before us today, I don't hear anyone talking about brothels and pimps and the impact as well. If we're talking about decrim, I think that's the easy way. That's what Brian said in our meeting last week. Decrim, if we're talking about decrim, what are we saying about brothels and pimps? And pimps, are they not abusing people? Are they not part of abusing women? And if we can also try to express as you are presenting, if you can tell us more about that, so that we can understand and broaden our understanding as far as this matter is concerned. Thanks, Chair.
I don't know your names, I'll just say 1, 2, 3. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Is there any other 4? 4 is one. 5. The last question. Answer section. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Oh, thank you. When we... Thank you for bringing that question up. When we talk about the plus minus 1,500 members, which sex workers, we're talking about the sex workers that have become the member of the movement. But the size estimations that was conducted by SWET, it says plus minus, it's 153,000 sex workers, which, as is a movement, we don't believe that is that number, because the sex workers criminalized, not everyone is out, so we believe that there's more of sex workers out there. So the 1,500 is the membership of the Sisonke movement. And within the movement, we represent the diversity of gender, which is male sex workers, transgender sex workers, and the female sex workers. Brothel, indoor, street base. All of them, yes.
Number 2.
Thank you. I'll just speak on the issue of decriminalization and where to put the pimps and brothels. Currently, with criminalization, you've got people who cannot, you have an industry that's not regulated, basically. What decriminalization will do is it will allow sex workers to set their own industry standards in terms of health, in terms of safety, in terms of employer-employee relationships that people enter into, and of course, again, just in terms of physical space. If you are outdoor, indoor, all of that, it's something that will be developed once you get decriminalization. The other thing is that we do need to remember that Section 23 of the Constitution does guarantee fair practices and the right to form unions, which currently with criminalization, sex workers don't have that right. So there's no recourse for when things go wrong, for example, when they get abused by pimps in Brussels. So that's why decriminalization is important, because then we can use sections such as 23, such as 22 for freedom of trade and occupational profession to make sure that then you cut out the third party or the middleman. In terms of safety and security, not all pimps abuse sex workers. Some people choose to work in groups because of issue of safety numbers. So when you have decriminalization, you can still find women who are still choosing to work in groups, and that is something, again, that they will regulate. In terms of children, just answering how children are impacted by sex work, you have stigma, discrimination, and prejudice that meted out onto children of sex workers. This is evident in schools, when children are being bullied, in playgrounds. You've got mothers who are unable to access financial services like loans. Some people are migrating, they don't have a proof of residence. So when they need to place their child in the schooling system in South Africa, whatever you need to do, you are always asked for proof of residence or a bank statement of sorts. And a lot of sex workers don't have access to that mainstream economy. And this is why, again, decriminalization is important, because children of sex workers don't, they're not written on the forehead that, well, this is what your mother does, right? It's people in the society, in the community. So we need those people, and to make sure that we have communities and societies that are more enabling for children to not be discriminated because of what their parents do. But in reality, the truth is that, you know, children do get abused, and that's why you've got, you know, organizations such as Mothers for the Future to try and say this is not just about sex work and sex workers or a buyer and a seller. It does have repercussions, but the repercussions are there because of criminalization. If you decriminalize, children can, or even sex workers themselves can afford early, can form early development centers for their own children, for people to, they can employ people to look after their kids when they're going to work at night. So it's not that, you know, sex worker children are having impact just solely because they're sex worker children. It's the stigma that's associated with poverty, with having black women, again, you know, at the bottom of that barrel.
Number four? Three.
No, I think my colleague has covered most of what I wanted to talk about when it comes to brothels.
Four?
Thank you so much. I just wanted to respond to a few issues. The first relates to a comment that was made, I think, by one of the members of the caucus with regards to these international case studies. And I do think it very important that we actually look at what they are based upon. The Kelly study, for example, is based upon the submissions by one South African academic and a survey filled in. The Cho study, on which most of the submissions in the report is made about trafficking, is a study that in the introduction it says it refers to 150 countries. Then if you read a bit further, you see that they allege themselves that they didn't have enough data. And then they tested their findings against three countries, Germany, France, and another European country. So the actual results, while academically valid, cannot, to my mind, form the basis of certain findings in the report. These things need to be looked at with regards to local research, with regards to the work done with sex workers in South Africa to find or to form a more nuanced finding as opposed to the reality in South Africa. Just also on a comparative law basis, there are many substantial differences between criminal law, for example, in France and South Africa. France has a civil law system which allows entrapment. Our system does not, or in a limited matter in terms of Section 252A of the Criminal Procedure Act. And that, and the, for example, Sweden also do not allow entrapment, which may explain why over 10 years, less than 500 people have actually been prosecuted, as opposed to the numbers quoted earlier from France. Then just finally on the issue of the comparison between, again, the linkage between adult pornography and the effect that it has on children. The point is that adult pornography is not criminalized. Pornography that is criminalized in South Africa is very specific, and that is where it involves certain categories of people. So if we say that we should consider the effect that sex work has on children, we may use that as an example, that there are other conduct which may have a similar effect, which is not criminalized. Thank you.
Minister,
ma'am, I wasn't part of this session, so I'm not sure if I'm able to ask and make a point.
Thank you very much. I'll give it over to my colleague to continue the program. Thank you very much for being such good audience.
I just want to check whether...
Okay. Robinson, you want to say something? Honorable Robinson.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm not quite sure whether Marcel was able to ask a question. He wasn't given the opportunity to speak a second time or to give input, and we're rather interested to hear that. Is that possible? That gentleman there, Marcel, I think his name was. May he just have a short input, please?
He said he wasn't present, so he doesn't think... Is it the same gentleman I'm talking about?
I think...
Yes.
Yeah, I would appreciate a comment, but as the chair wishes.
No, he wasn't... I think what he was saying, Madam Chair, was that he wasn't given a second opportunity to speak, but he would like just in a little while.
We will add him.
Yes. Yeah. I just want to check from the following NGOs who's present, because I can see people are leaving. Love Justice,
present.
Song Agenda Justice. African Center for Migration and Society. Asujiki Coalition. Kwanele, Alexander Downing Watkins and Stripper Rook team, Anizaz Gabsen, Public Asaria Sungano, HFW, Hope for Women, Social Justice Component of the University of Stellenbosch Faculty of Law, not yet.
Madam, I've already spoken this morning. Thank you.
Okay, okay. Oh, it is the same lady, okay.
Yes, thank you.
Cause of Justice. South African National AIDS Council. SANAC. Southern African Catholic Bishops. Ayanda Denge. Wait.
She's happy.
Can those people sitting right here at the back come nearer? There are empty chairs now here.
That's your shoes.
I think that is the last one. There's something here. M.O. Kenny? Is there a person like that? Okay. Now we're going to give this opportunity to Love Justice.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chen. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Yes, I'm right here. Good afternoon, everyone. Before I start, I'd just like to introduce myself. My name is Kirsten Hornby. I'm the National Director for Love Justice South Africa, as well as the Director of the National Freedom Network, which is the collection of NGOs combating human trafficking in South Africa. So to give you a brief overview, before I move on, actually let me mention, I have been extensively involved with sex workers in Gauteng over the last 5 years, including meeting a lot of women that are working both on the streets and in brothels. I've heard a lot of narratives, and unfortunately I've been exposed to a lot of the violence and abuse that these women suffer in a way that might not have yet been represented here. So our organization works in partnership with the South African government to intercept human trafficking victims before they get exploited. Over the last 2 years, we've intercepted over 250 victims in Gauteng alone, most of which were international victims coming into South Africa for purposes of exploitation. What's also quite interesting to note is international research shows that there is quite a disparate split between labor trafficking and sex trafficking, with labor trafficking being in the majority. However, if we look in South Africa at the amount of cases that come forward, it is by far in favor of sex trafficking cases. So why is that the case, that sex trafficking cases are so overrepresented in our courts versus labor trafficking? And from engaging with the SAPS specifically, it's because prostitution is illegal and is therefore a priority of DBCI. DBCI is actively looking into prostitution rings and, as a byproduct, discover a lot of human trafficking victims, which means that if we legalize prostitution in South Africa, that there's a high chance that sex trafficking victims that currently have a chance at escape through rescues will no longer have that opportunity. I also seem to see that the notion in the room is when we think about prostitution, we think of independent women working on the streets who are very autonomous. And I have met many of those women, and they definitely do exist. And please hear me when I say this, that I am very much for their dignity and their rights. I know that the conversation of whether a woman should have the right to sell her own body is up for debate. But I do not think the question of whether a woman or anyone has the right to sell the body of somebody else is up for debate. And when we legalize the sex industry, that is the type of thing we start to see. We start to legitimize pimps and traffickers and people that are involved in organized crime to sell the body of other women in South Africa. Sorry, so back on point there. So when we say we are fully decriminalizing prostitution, we are legitimizing pimps, traffickers, and brothel owners. And that is inherently problematic. Because what we are doing is we are expanding the industry, and we are allowing people who are currently, they are able to operate in an illegal environment. So if we're going to legalize that industry, those guys are not suddenly going to change tax and suddenly register to pay tax. They already know how to work around regulation, to find loopholes, and work very successfully in a highly profitable industry. Agreeing to regulations, paying taxes will reduce their profits, and therefore they are highly incentivized not to comply. We also need to understand that sex is not blind. So in South Africa, especially from the sex trafficking side, we see a disproportionate amount of foreign victims being drawn out of different nationalities, and also within our country, because a good brothel is one that offers variety of race and age. So if we have an oversupply of a certain profile of women, we're going to see other types of women being drawn in. Younger women, foreign women, more beautiful women, and what it's going to do is going to make a very unconducive environment to women that are working in the sex industry. I also want to quickly touch on the point of coercion. So in order to coerce someone into something, you are trying to leverage something over them. When we are allowing someone to leverage money over someone, are we not coercing consent? If we are coercing consent, are we not then imposing on the rights of women who do not want to engage in prostitution, but if the price is high enough and they are in a desperate situation, they could be compelled into an act that they would never otherwise do? Should we legalize that act? Moving on to foreign victims, at the beginning of the day, Sweat specifically referenced the women working on Oxford Road in Illovo. I've done extensive work in that area, and from personal experience, over 80% of the sex workers in those areas are foreign nationals who are undocumented and are working as sex workers in South Africa. So if we legalize prostitution, none of those women's rights will be covered by law. They will all be illegal immigrants that will have no rights that would be afforded to South African sex workers. So what would happen is we'd start to see a dual industry. We'll start to see certain sex workers that have rights and protections and others that don't. And you can see how this could significantly exacerbate the xenophobic sentiment that is currently going on in those areas. Foreign victims, especially undocumented ones in South Africa, are extremely vulnerable and the ones most prone to trafficking. To alienate them from fellow South African sex workers could potentially do them huge amounts of harm. I don't think we can talk about foreign sex workers without talking about documentation. And I think that the fact that undocumented migrants have been left off the table today is something that has definitely been missing from the conversation. Mm-hmm. What type of visa would a sex worker from a foreign country obtain? Would it be a special skills visa? Would it be a general work visa? Would we ever be able to get to a point where we can prove that no South African is capable of doing sex work to justify bringing in a foreigner to do that work for them? There are a lot of intricacies within this industry that we need to consider, especially if you're going to go forward with the decriminalisation arguments. Things such as disclosure of HIV status. Does a sex worker then lose the right to keep his status confidential? Does a client have the right to keep his status confidential? What happens if the client engages in sex with a sex worker, she later finds out that the client is HIV positive, what type of recourse does she have? Would we then need to keep a database of perpetrators' ID numbers in order to be able to follow up that recourse, and would clients ever consent to that? We need to understand that creating regulation in a very secretive environment where clients by nature do not want to be known will make these regulations completely implementable, and not to mention extremely burdensome and expensive on the state to implement. And lastly, I just want to emphasize that the response to human trafficking in South Africa has been unfortunately very dismal up until now. And because of the low rate of identification, that conversation has not been able to be brought strongly enough to the table. Like I said, through our small team, we've been able to identify over 250 cases within the last 2 years. If that number is present in one province within South Africa that can be identified by one team of NGOs, we can think that it is maybe more of a significant problem that we would like to admit. I say that with all respect and not to inflate the numbers, but from personal experience, I see the abuse within this industry and its link to trafficking, and I really believe that it's undeniable. Thank you.
Much the next song agenda, Justice.
Thanks, madam. Can I ask if Brian could just quickly help me with the sound? Sorry about that. My name is Marlies Richter, and I'm presenting on behalf of Sonke Gender Justice, and my co-author is Zia Bufferman, and I'm very much aware that there's been about 21 presentations before me, and that there's another 11 to follow me, so I've decided to speak very little and to show you a documentary, rather. As you can see from my outline, you're going to hear very little from me. And with Brian's assistance, I hope that you'll be able to hear the presentation or the documentary that will follow from my introduction to the organization that I'm presenting and myself. I am speaking here today as I believe I've got the academic backing and background and practical experience of working within the sex work, health and human rights sector for the last 10 years. My PhD research was on sex worker access to healthcare services in South Africa and Kenya. And on the ground, I've worked with sex worker groups and sex workers across South Africa, but more specifically in Hillbrow, in Sandton, in Cape Town, and in Rustenburg. Through my research experience, I've seen in big data sets how the criminal law gives rise to rape and murder among sex workers. And through my human rights work with sex workers, I've seen how colleagues have been maimed and who've been beaten and crippled because of the criminal law. Sonke is one of the biggest gender-based violence organizations in South Africa, and we work on a range of issues related to violence, but very specifically, we are interested in violence prevention. We submitted a detailed written submission to the honourable members, which I hope you have before you. And I will now hopefully show this video. Let's hold thumbs, Brian.
It was harder, you know, to go and clean the house, do washing, clean the house, and iron one day, and for the 60 rand. It was very difficult for me because when I go there, I borrow 20 rand, the transport, my balance is 40 rand.
I got my trick, very good result, but then my family wouldn't allow me to go to varsity. They had the belief that a girl doesn't go to university.
But when we're working, we not think about those things. We think about our priorities. We think about our problem we left at home. We think about our children, education. We think about food. We think about our family.
I afraid sometimes because, like, I'm thinking about my children when I get arrested. I feel like sometimes.
It doesn't seem as if it was meant to be. What the documentary is about is the experiences of four sex workers. I'm just going to kill the sound. The experiences of four sex workers in the Cape Town context, and who spoke very eloquently about the experiences of rape and exploitation by the police. Sorry, Brian, my PowerPoint is not showing now. Okay. There's a request that I only do it through sound.
Problems we have at home. We think about our children, education, we think about food, we think about our family.
I afraid sometimes because, like, I'm thinking about my children when I get arrested. I feel like sometimes guilty, but I don't have any way, like, to do another job.
Funeral cards. Someone is sick, school fees, you see. So sex work makes money that you can do and pay the big responsibility and change lifestyle.
I would rather want to change how people perceive sex workers and want government to sort of look at the job market, look at reality, look at our country. Maybe at what we're doing, but not target the sex worker, because there is no jobs. Once you have the criminal record, you can never work anymore.
I want them to get a better life, not just like me, because at least me, I'm still alive.
When I start getting in the road, I'm scared the police will arrest me. If I'm arrested, what will happen with my children?
Can you just wrap up?
You know, sometimes you will try to forget, but it's not so...
I'm sorry, the presentation has a lot of subtitles. The 2 points that I wanted to withdraw from the documentary is the very high levels of gender-based violence that sex workers face. And in research that was released in 2017 in Soweto, showed that two-thirds of sex workers had experienced violence in their lifetime, and that was 2.6% higher, 2.6 times higher than those of the prevalence that women in Gauteng generally report in terms of violence. The second point was one from a research report we are releasing later this month about police brutality in two provinces, in Gauteng and Mpumalanga specifically, and it documents the experiences of sex workers with law enforcement. And of the respondents there, about a third of sex workers reported being raped by a policeman. So the experiences of the woman in the documentary can be generalized in many ways to all male, female, and transgender sex workers. And they are vulnerable because the law makes them so. The Sonke submission that you have in front of you, together with those of my colleagues from SWET and Sonke and the Women's Legal Center and others, are based on peer-reviewed academic published research. And the research shows us that if we don't remove the criminal law from sex work, sex workers will never be safe, and society will not be safe. The Multiparty Women Caucus asked us specifically to comment on the Law Reform Commission report, and we find the recommendations that the criminal law should continue to govern sex work after all the horror, pain, violence, and illness that have been documented deeply distressing. The report does not reflect the wealth of evidence-based research on the harms of criminalization, in particular on gender-based violence and HIV prevalence, and how the removal of the criminal law will dramatically ameliorate these. I think the South African Law Reform Commission report ignored this evidence. It became undone by ideology and denied the sex workers the protection of the law. Sonke asks the Multiparty Women's Caucus not to make the same mistake and to choose evidence over emotion. The removal of criminal law from adult consensual sex work will make all of us safer. But most importantly, it will afford the most marginalized in our society the benefit of protection.
I said your pain is over.
Last part of my sentence. Our society, the benefit, protection, and the affirmation of the law that many of us take for granted. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to present this afternoon. My name is Dr. Rebecca Walker. I'm presenting on behalf of my colleague, Professor Joe Veery, and myself. We're based at the African Centre for Migration and Society, the ACMS, which is at Wits University. Just to give a little bit of background, ACMS is Africa's leading scholarly institution for research and teaching on human mobility. And as a teaching and research centre, we regularly partner with organisations in government and civil society in conducting research and especially feeding into and shaping policy in South Africa. We come from a range of backgrounds, including politics, anthropology, public health. And one of our main areas of interest through our research is in sex work, and particularly the intersections of migration and sex work. Over a number of years, Professor Joe Veery and myself and other colleagues have been involved in research projects which have explored the challenges faced by migrant and non-migrant sex workers, their healthcare experiences, including access challenges to services such as HIV and STI treatments, and the multiple forms of violence experienced by sex workers under the criminalization of the industry. We've published widely on this issue, and for those of you who have seen our written submission, we've provided a list of a number of these publications. And driving our work has been the importance of centering the voices of sex workers and of doing research with sex workers rather than on or about them, and in honouring sex workers as the experts of their own lives, who can well articulate their own experiences and their needs. And I commend the number of sex workers who are here today who are speaking up about their own experiences. Thank you for being here.
Through this work, we've been able to build up a body of research that is evidence-based, that is rooted in academic rigor, and that is accessible, particularly beyond academia itself. And this is where we see our role in trying to bring together academia and civil society and the different voices coming out. And this is important because research and data can be a very powerful tool, but it can also be quite dangerous when it's used to misrepresent or it's not backed up or substantiated. So when numbers are used to claim, for example, trafficking figures, we need to know where they come from, how they were collected, and what they tell us. And there is a lot of really good, strong data out there. And this is one of our main concerns about the report, that despite the research that exists, in its current formulation, the report makes very little use of the broad body of research on sex work in South Africa and globally. Key here is the limited attention to quality scholarship generated in South Africa regionally and internationally. Contextually relevant quality research that's been produced at the ACMS and published in international peer-reviewed academic journals, which show that the far-reaching harms of the criminalization of sex work. And I just want to draw attention to critically here the South African Health Review, which came out in 2016 and for the first time included a paper on sex work and health. This key publication is published annually by the Health Systems Trust and used to inform health systems and public health planning nationally. And the key point that this paper made was that public health improvements, including access to treatment, particularly with regard to HIV, are linked to the decriminalisation of sex work. So where sensitive, appropriate and evidence-based responses to sex work can be developed, this comes under the criminalisation of the industry. Our second concern is around the failure to engage with the broad range of sex worker voices. In our research and in a number of different research projects, there is a diversity and multiplicity of sex worker voices that represent the many different experiences, the many different backgrounds of sex workers, and these are not engaged with in the report. In fact, they are silenced, instead relying on the perspective of a few with a specific agenda which has resulted in a biased and narrow representation of experiences. And this is not to undermine the experiences of those who are represented in the report, but to say that the picture is a lot more complex and a lot broader, and all of these voices need to be engaged with. Again, there are many publications which draw on these different experiences of sex workers through evidence-based research, and particularly at the ACMS, a lot of participatory research methods, which allow sex workers to tell their stories in their own way and provide an invaluable resource in recognizing the wide range and often complex perspectives of sex work. Our third concern is around the absence of engaging with the intersections between migration and sex work. And I appreciate the earlier speaker who brought up this concern around the lack of engagement with migration. A key concern that we have at the ACMS, particularly given our central interest in migration, is the failure to acknowledge the relationship between migration and sex work and what this means in terms of the experiences and vulnerabilities faced by sex workers, particularly non-nationals operating under a criminalized system. Research shows that there is a significant overlap between sex work and migration, and that sex workers are a highly mobile population. And this intersection is usually linked to people's people's livelihood options. And I just want to draw attention to one very important study which was conducted at four sites across South Africa in 2010 during the Soccer World Cup, which is known as the World Cup study, which showed that more than 85% of female sex workers had migrated from their place of birth, with 39% being internal migrants. And it's important to remember when we talk about migration, we're not just talking about those who crossed a border, but migrants include those who have moved internally as well, so who have moved from one city to another, one province for another. So 39% were internal migrants and 46% were cross-border migrants. And there are a number of reasons why sex workers are a mobile population, including access to different client bases, improved work search for improved work conditions, servicing mobile populations such as truckers, and to avoid violence and stigma. Findings from the World Cup study highlighted that being a cross-border migrant in particular can heighten the risks that sex workers face, resulting in them being arrested more frequently, having to pay higher bribes, threatened with deportation, and also being less able to exercise their rights. Key here is that it shows that the combination of the criminalized industry in which sex workers cannot access their rights and face multiple forms of violence with a context in which non-nationals particularly face high levels of xenophobia and discrimination leads to heightened risks. And this needs to be engaged with. To not engage with the centrality of migration to sex work means not only that the complex and broad picture of sex work is ignored, but that migrant sex workers' specific concerns remained unaddressed. To continue to fail to engage with migration and sex work means that the report cannot represent that broad, that breadth of experiences. Our final concern is the insufficient recognition of sex work as a key livelihood strategy for some, and sex work has been recognised as a key livelihood strategy by the UN. In South Africa, sex work remains a viable option for many, especially given the high levels of unemployment and discrimination. Poverty in South Africa is highly racialised and feminised. However, the criminalisation of sex work, alongside the emphasis on sexual exploitation, means that individuals selling sex are not considered as contributors to the areas of work and livelihood. Rather, they're framed as deviants, criminals, and or victims. Given this, our main concern is that there is an urgent need for the committee to engage with the existing quality evidence relating to sex work on the South African context, and that this evidence should be used to inform policy processes and the development of the report. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, thank you, members of the Parliament, and thank you for the NGOs to give us an opportunity, and we acknowledge this moment as a coalition. ASIJIKI is the coalition of the decriminalization of sex workers in South Africa. I am the coordinator. My name is Constance Notando Mate. I've been a sex worker activist for the past 10 years. ASIJIKI is a group of the sex workers, activists, and advocacy, lawyers, human rights defenders, and advocates who advocate for law reform of the decriminalization of sex workers in South Africa. Within the coalition, we have different organizations from all sectors, gender human rights, and human rights, and legal and public health. These organizations have done a research. They saw that the criminalization, it doesn't work. That's why they are in favor of the decriminalization of sex workers. Within the coalition, we are about 70 organizations that they support the decriminalization of sex workers in different sectors. The main aim and the main reason why we support the decriminalization of the sex workers, because we do have within the coalition the researchers. They have got enough evidence to prove. We do have the sex workers themselves that can speak up on their behalf. And our main aim is to conduct the advocacy to highlight the impact of the criminalization on sex workers' health and the human rights. And the limited access services, so that we can promote and protect and defend the human rights of the sex workers. The reason why we submitted our submission, there was some concern that came out from the coalition. We were so concerned why the report, it took so long and now is outdated. For example, the report stated that if a DUSA trade union doesn't support the decriminalization of sex workers, which wasn't true. FEDUSA has signed as a member of the coalition, they support the decriminalization of the sex workers. Some of the people in this room, they are aware that they sent a press release that was sent all over, stated that they support the decriminalization, and I do have a copy of their resolutions. with the public evidence was excluded in the report, it was totally ignored. Today in this room, we do have number of healthy organizations with the evidence of research. As the GG disagree with the SALOG report recommendation of full criminalization of sex work, sex workers are dying in numbers. Every woman of South Africa, are we happy to count the dead bodies? And second, the recommendation of partial decriminalization. As a GG, they are also do not support partial decriminalization. We can't compare South Africa with the Sweden, with the Swedish model, the Sweden. What happens in Sweden? Sweden is a small country. We can't compare South Africa with a small country like Sweden. The rate of unemployment is not the same with the rate of unemployment in South Africa. The other thing, we cannot say, open the market and then we arrest the people that are buying in the market. It doesn't make sense at all. The diversion programs, we have supported the decriminalization because we do have an evidence that the diversion program does not work. Some sectors of the government, they have tried the diversion program in different experts, but it didn't work. We as a coalition, as a CGU, we keep on saying we support decriminalization and that the sex workers' voices must be respected. And the sex workers, they still have got their choices. Let's just respect and acknowledge their choices of the decriminalization of sex work. There is something that I want to share with you. The unique about this coalition, the 70 organizations I'm talking about, we are talking about the 70 civil society organizations that are based in South Africa. We are not talking about the organizations that are in Europe, some European countries. We are talking about the sex work, the organizations that are facing the challenge, that are working so closely with the community, and they are coming in different provinces. They are not coming from the same provinces. They have done their research and they are sure of their research. As we heard in this room, some of the members of the ACG, they give out their presentations. We recommend as a coalition the decriminalization of sex workers. By doing research, listening to the sex workers. I am a sex worker myself. I want people to remove that expert, that the expert in their mind that the white, that the people are speaking on behalf of the sex workers. As a coordinator of the coalition of the 70 organization, I speak for my voice. Not someone to speak for me. I still say I want decriminalization. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we are going to take questions from the members of Parliament after the coming session, because we are rushing for time. Now I'm going to hand over to Honorable Matthew.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon.
afternoon, everybody. I'm sure everybody is tired by now, but I guess this is a very important issue. We need to have our ears and eyes open and try to continue. My name is Nokole Tumajege. I'm one of the members of the multi-party caucus. I'll continue from where Chair has finished. Please, ladies and gentlemen, let's look into the time. Each member is allocated 10 minutes. If there are two people who are going to do the presentation, maybe five, whichever way you can decide. So the next one is Kwanele. Do we have Kwanele? Can we have the presentation?
Fellow participants, good afternoon. Let me just start by saying and emphasizing that Section 10 and 11 of our Constitution of Chapter 2, which is the right to dignity and the right to life, are non-derogable rights, and they should be protected entirely. Any right in our Constitution that is not tabled as a non-derogable right that seeks to infringe on that may be limited. There was an honorable member earlier on who raised the issue that all those who oppose the decriminalization of prostitution and its call as sex work have been saying that I know of somebody, and there has been no one who has been saying that I am. So I am that I am. So I am representing other people that are also those who are in prostitution and those who have left prostitution and those who are in the process of exiting prostitution. Exercising my right as a citizen of South Africa, I refuse to use the terminology sex work as prescribed earlier on by an honorable member, because I refuse to glorify the exploitation of women and also violence against women by men by calling it sex work. So I will stick to the terminology of prostitution and the system of prostitution. And I also welcome the clarity made earlier on by a member of parliament that this body has not taken yet a position on this matter and that there is room for engagement, because I was beginning to get uncomfortable by the mere fact that we are now prescribed when we were invited to make submissions. So the system of prostitution undermines directly the right to dignity, and it also threatens the right to life, which are sections 10 and 11 that I've also mentioned. South African context, we have been enjoying democracy for the past 23 years in theory, but we still have inequalities between white and black men and women, the rich and poor in this country. It is therefore no wonder that the vast majority of the estimated, by a study by the Sex Worker Education and Advocacy Task Force, 153,000 persons who are being prostituted in this country, that those are represented by black, poor women. And those women have entered prostitution because of lack of, there were minimum choices, but mainly poverty, but not the only thing. And women in prostitution also do not just wake up one day and decide that they are going to get into prostitution, but prostitution is chosen for us by our colonial past and apartheid, the persistent inequalities. And the fact that we have pimps, brothel owners, and the men who buy us in prostitution also taking advantage of those vulnerabilities. I am here today in my capacity as a founding member of Kwanele, and Kwanele is the movement of survivors of the sex trade. Some, like I said before, have exited prostitution, and some are still in the process of exiting, and some do wish to exit prostitution. We have a presence in 6 provinces out of the 9 provinces of the Republic of South Africa. We are constituted by only black women living in South Africa, and I'm saying living in South Africa because amongst us we have our sisters coming from our neighboring countries who came to South Africa looking for greener pastures but found themselves in prostitution. We do dream of a life free of oppression, patriarchy, violence, and economic inequalities. A life where we can access a wider array of dignified and decent employment opportunities and other options of making a living. We want to participate as citizens and as human beings, not as a key population, namely in this context, sex workers. And we also declare that prostitution is an embodiment of violence and sexual exploitation, making it one of the worst forms of violence against women. The South African Law Reform Commission has released a report last year on the 26th of May. Kwanele, we welcome this report, And we also appreciate the work done by the South African Law Reform Commission. It is then a pity that the representative from the Law Reform Commission is no longer here. And we also appreciate the terminology and the language being used, inconsistent with our legal terms. The system of prostitution exploits us, and therefore we are not in support of its legalization or decriminalization. Myself and all the women in Hwanele, who some felt hurt, used to, and in the process of living that life, feel patronized by the use or the continued use of the terminology of sex work, because we find that what we found as something that we had to do because of our circumstances is now being normalized, and what we view also as violence against women. And so we do find ourselves patronized by this by this terminology of referral to ourselves. And prostitution is not the solution to our unemployment and also to our poverty. There are two recommendations by the South African Law Reform Commission. But we also do take note that, you know, even after the mounting evidence that points to criminalization not working, we have that evidence nationally, regionally, as well as internationally. The South African Law Reform Commission continue to actually recommend that. But we welcome the second recommendation made by the South African Law Reform Commission, but also noting the fact that it does not elaborate what they mean by diversion, and it also does not give us a lot of who's going to be diverted. Is it going to be the women? Is it going to be the sex buyers? Is it going to be the pimps, the brothel owners? And is it going to be the third parties? And is it going to be everybody else that is also involved in prostitution? We understand that criminalization does not work for the women that are in prostitution. It further exploits women that are in prostitution. It victimizes those who are already exploited, exposes women to police brutality, denies women to access to justice, hinders women from exiting, and it is above all costly to the state, because a lot of these the risks that women find themselves in are at the end of the day costing the state, whether it is the Justice Department, the Health Department, Social Development, etc. Partial criminalization, where it is sometimes you know, known as the Swedish model, the Nordic law, abolitionist law, the sex buyer law, or the equality model, and in our context as Kwanele, we prefer to call it the equality model. It is the only legal option that looks promising to reduce prostitution and to also ensure that the rights of those who are prostituted are respected. And so Kwanele welcomes this suggestion. We welcome the first recommendation of partial criminalization, or more correctly, partial decriminalization of the system of prostitution, criminalization of the system of prostitution with the exception of the person who sells, with an understanding that the seller in most settings does not freely choose to be prostituted, but that prostitution is chosen for us, like I said, by our past and our inequalities. Women in prostitution income decrease with time, hence we do not view prostitution as economic empowerment. Prostitution exposes women to violence from men. A study by Sonke Gender Justice, reported in Bekisisa Center for Health Journalism, stated out of the 9 factors that make men more likely to either beat or rape a woman, 4 of those were named. Men who buy sex are more likely to beat or rape a woman. Men who feel that they have sexual entitlement are more likely to beat or rape a woman. Men who have multiple sexual partners are more likely to beat or rape a woman. And men who engage in transactional sex are more likely to beat or rape a woman. So by continuing to say that women should be exposed in prostitution and be selling sex, we are actually saying that it is okay for women to be at the hands of these men. So Kwanele calls this parliament to advise on policy with regard to the system of prostitution to free women from violence, patriarchy, oppression, and stigma, and enable prostituted women to exit. We also call for the recognition of the system of prostitution and its treatment as as men's violence against women, as also qualified by international human rights law, Article 6 of the Universal Human Rights Declaration. We also call on this Parliament to pilot, with immediate effect, option 1 of the South African Law Reform Commission, even under the present law, to gather evidence of its effects, because option 2 is already in place and has not worked for the women. Thank you very much.
I was just about to say half a minute left. You are very good at timing yourself. Thank you very much. The next presenter should be from Alexander Downing Watkins and what? Stripper Robert Tim. Do we have?
All right. My name is Alexander Downing Watkins. I'm here to represent Stripper Okie, but also myself, as a non-South African sex worker living and working in Cape Town. I think it's, you know, really important that, you know, I kind of like start responding to the idea that all sex workers are women. There's a variety of sex workers of all genders, including women, trans people, genderqueer people, and men, gay and straight. Who have varied experiences of sex work outside of the moralistic ideas that paint the idea of a sexual woman as an exploited woman. Many gender non-conforming people, such as myself, and find sex work to be an option that lies outside of otherwise highly gendered, low-income work, such as being a waitress or a domestic worker. I'd also like to touch upon the idea of sex work being inherently exploitative versus other kinds of work. I find that the anxieties inherent to our current economic system are heaped upon sex workers in a way that they're not heaped on other workers. No worker makes decisions inside of a vacuum. For many people, sex work offers the ability to make active decisions about making money that other low-income work would not offer. Sex workers should not have to legitimize their choices in order to exist free from violence. Forcing sex work farther underground, as anything short of full decriminalization would do, only puts our lives at risk. I would like to also respond to the idea that sex workers are trafficked persons. Although trafficking does exist on a global scale, as a non-South African sex worker, I acknowledge that the experience of migrant sex workers as work that is oftentimes misconstrued as trafficking. Many non-South African sex workers do know what they are coming to South Africa to do, and to purport otherwise would infantilize these people and disregard their experience. Even those that come to South Africa as students, low-income workers, or undocumented often go into sex work based on the limited work options that are available to them. Information that is shared by those who have gone to do such work is readily available to those who have gone and returned, as well as those who have been deported against their will. Anti-trafficking initiatives call for greater police interference in order to save these workers from their profession, oftentimes putting them at risk of the violence of police harassment, imprisonment, and deportation back to areas that may have left because of poverty, homophobia, or misogyny. We can't arrest away the issues of colonial, racialized, and gendered violence that sex workers face, especially not by arresting the workers themselves. Violence and harassment from police force sex workers into darker and more secluded areas of the city. Those who are profiled by police as sex workers include trans women, women of color, and queer people who are considered suspect based on their appearance. Through heavy surveillance and police harassment, sex workers are not able to work in groups, creating more dangerous conditions for them by allowing clients with the very worst of intentions to justify getting them alone and taking them into secluded industrial areas. The Nordic model supports this as well. South African sex workers face time in prison. For those who are trans or gender nonconforming, this means time in a space where they are at risk of disproportionate violence. And those who are non-South Africans means time spent in immigration prison and then deportation back to countries they have chosen to immigrate from for whatever reason. Anti-trafficking initiatives give false hope that the only thing standing between sex workers and that have experienced extreme violence and a life of participating in capitalism is low-income work. Across countries around the world, jewelry and candle making have been the chosen route of anti-trafficking initiatives, saving people from work. Promising a sustainable livelihood free from violence is itself a huge promise to make, and I'm sure any sex worker who has experienced excessive violence would find renouncing sex work a small price to pay in order to participate in such a hopeful future. Through offering cheap labor strikes me as an option that is temporary at best, and saying that these jobs created outside of the sex work industry are inherently more dignified puts those former sex workers into a place where they must fully accept cheap labor to support themselves and their families. If this doesn't work out and they go back to sex work, they have made an undignified choice, the choice not to be a good woman. Labeling the experiences of sex workers just as exploited women or trafficked persons falls into dealing within the realm of the solely representational. As sex workers, we are used to seeing the media and anti-sex work initiatives plaster the websites with faceless and masked images of scantily clad women walking demurely through a strip club or down the street. This kind of objectification is something their campaigns claim to save us from, but are they listening to us? Thank you.
Oh my God. Thank you very much. The next speaker is Patrick Asaria Sungano. Do we have?
Okay, and yes, Asaria Sungano, a well-known all over South Africa. Messina, Randfontein, Mokopane, KZN, Joburg. And this is what I'm going to say tonight on behalf of myself. I got into the system of prostitution when I was 18 years of age. To assist my mother, who was also at the time in the sex trade, to raise my four younger siblings. Even though my mother was in the sex trade, life was not easy, and we struggled a lot, hence I had to also step in and assist. After my mother passed away, my last pick became more difficult, so much that I forced myself to marry to a guy who was a thief, and even that life was not easy being married to a criminal, and that is what most women in prostitution are exposed to. And he too was murdered, leaving me with the children to take care of. And the answer is, I go back to prostitution because of the situation. For most women in the sex trade, including myself, prostitution is not a free choice, but a choice some of us have to make because of circumstances, and those vary. But in my case, it was poverty and seeing my mother doing it. My mother was in the sex trade for many years, yet she died having nothing. And I came out of it empty-handed. Because of this, my siblings didn't manage to finish school, and our mother passed away with nothing, not even a home. It is definitely not a future we can offer to our girls as a profession. It is not like I like the way I do things and would like to change it if we are offered opportunities. Prostitution has undermined my dignity so much that I am not respected, and I'm being called by name. Makosha, Sfere, Bitch, Ure. The current law criminalizes everyone involved in prostitution, buyers, pimps, those who sell sex, but it is only the woman that gets targeted by the police. The men who buy us in prostitution are violent, and they often beat, rape, or murder us. Why is it that the woman is the only targeted? But we will not be alone in the street. We will be with the men who buy us. The police do not protect us, as we do not have access to justice and legal services because we are criminalized. The criminal records we obtain under this law make it difficult for us to exit this harmful practice because we cannot get other employment. We always hear that there are discussions about what should happen to us. Even HIV prevention intervention come to us, but no one ever asks us what we want. We are just given condoms and lubricants and taught to know our HIV status. our rights in the streets are always violated. If not by the men who buy us, it will be pimps, the community, and even the police. We don't have a freedom to walk, especially at night, because we are the suspects. We need financial empowerment like education, skills, and decent and proper employment opportunities. We do not want to be bought by men for sex in order to survive. Our bodies should not be treated like things that can be used, as we are human. We mustn't be kicked like a ball. I'll be sold like tomatoes. Our bodies should not be treated like any other thing. When a man has the money that you need, you are not equal to him. Everything is done his way. We would like to be part of the solution to ending HIV and AIDS and any other STIs by the men who buy us offer more money for sex without condoms. And because we need or sometimes are scared, we agree. The less people in prostitution, the less HIV will spread. Many men doesn't want to get tested. And one day I asked one of the clients whether he know his status. He just told me that he know his status from his wife. By the time when the wife was pregnant, she was tested negative. So which means that man was also negative. We want to be treated like all women and not like sex workers who must now be given condoms and lubricants. It doesn't change our situation and circumstances. And I'm giving this time to Sylvia.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Sylvia Ruka. I'm one of the women that end up being saying Kwanele. Kwanele, it means enough. I'm also a survivor from the prostitution. We are together.
Okay.
We end up being coming in the one thing that as we are women of Africa or as we are mothers of our children, what kind of a job that we are saying this is a sex work that I can't bring my child? Is the money that I'm saving for my child, taking to the university, that I can take her to the street? How do I feel when I see another woman when I'm passing, busy stripping with a man in the street? How do I feel as a woman of Africa? How do I feel with the women that those days they were fighting for our freedom? Is this our freedom, that to sell our body, to be naked? My mothers and sisters, my brothers, sex for us, we say we are survivors, it's not a work. It's abuse. It abuses you mentally. It abuses your soul. It abuses you physically. What kind of a job that is a job that I can do it behind in a dark corner? You call that is a job? No. What kind of a job that when I'm getting out from my house and going and say I'm going to the job, that I can't tell my daughter or my son that I'm going to the job? I have to lie. And at the same time, I'm going to church. There is organization for I'm saying Strasbourg, those are the ones that they pick me up from the street, and then we swear that I realize that I'm not a man's body. I am a human being, I am a mother of the nation also, that I can stand here and say, no, it's enough. Kwanele, kwanele, bafazi. Kwanele. Thank you very much.
Very much, and you've been very good at time. Two people, one presentation, just on the dot. Thank you very much for your presentation. Our next speaker is Hope for Women, HFW.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, participants and members of Parliament. I am the founder and CEO of Hope for Women, which is an organisation that works very strongly in the area of prevention and awareness, rescue, restoration and reintegration of survivors of prostitution and trafficking. I co-lead the African Alliance Against Human Trafficking, which is a coalition that works together to empower and equip those that are on the field working directly with this issue. I'm on my way to gain the Professional Certificate in Tackling Human Trafficking internationally, with that involves prostitution. But besides that, I have been on grassroots level for over 10 years. I have made relationships in townships, brothels, strip clubs, streets on the streets. I have built relationships with these people. I have rescued some of them, along with law enforcement, as an intervention level, out of prostitution and trafficking situations. As an organization coming from ground level, strengthening efforts to combat human trafficking and exploitation, as well as increasing public understanding of sexually exploited related issues, focusing in the area of the harms of prostitution, sex trafficking, and pornography. I believe today we are here discussing a predatory system by nature, where one group gets to demand something from another group for a price. We're not talking about people sitting in an office in front of a computer all day. We are talking about bodies that are being sold. The question we should be asking ourselves, are we debating about a happy life, or are we debating about a meaningful life? Once you've examined, like I have and many others, the true nature of prostitution, firstly, we cannot, in good conscience, call it work. This is problematic. And secondly, we have seen over and over and over again, this is a human rights violation. I know this because I stand here on behalf of the hundreds of prostitutes that we have helped. Either we have walked a journey with them, either we have intervened in a rescue, either we have shared many, many, many tears. And not one of them joyfully chose to lead a happy life of prostitution. The women, men and children I know were once defecated on, spat on, sworn at, slapped, strangled during sex, held against the wall, threatened to the degree of possible suicide. Some of them didn't even make it. Those who have since left prostitution describe it as damaging, dehumanizing, degrading, and the most soul-destroying time of their lives. And they are not joyful. They are not joyful to be out, now leading meaningful lives, thanks to our restoration and reintegration programs. Drugs and alcohol, as a push factor, is used to create debt bondage, keeping women in prostitution. I saw that 4 weeks ago when we were called by the police to assist in a brothel holding 20 women prostituting in the most disgusting environment. No water, no lights, dark, dirty mattresses. Two weeks later, the police called us again to be ready for a possible trafficking situation. We were faced with 15 prostitutes who were working in that area. The first 5 minutes of their conversation with us was very superficial. The last 10 minutes of their deeper conversation led to a flood of tears. The tears came at a part when we questioned them and asked them what their hopes and dreams were. As the tears rolled down their faces, the one young girl said to me, I would love to be in the catering industry. Then the information of hell came out. What came out was what it's truly like to be working as a prostitute. Who was holding them? And why they just can't leave. If this works, should we give women the legal right to experience abuse? We're talking about different countries and what's worked and what hasn't worked. The reality is decriminalizing prostitution is hellish. This notion of creating awareness of it's going to be better above ground, it's going to keep trafficking out, is just clearly a farce and simply a window to hell. In the place where this is happening, the promises of a decriminalized prostitution market where women can live out their empowered dreams of being a sex worker is not happening. Why are we even having this conversation? We're talking about a business model of trading sex. That can be a job and an acceptable form of occupation. Any kind of payment for sex is exploitation. There is a certain amount of fundamental aspects in human sexuality on how we engage with one another. It's intimacy, mutual agreement, it's caring. This is not prostitution. Decriminalizing prostitution will not eradicate the trafficking component. We cannot educate the client to decide whether the prostitute is being trafficked or not. We have a significant problem with human trafficking. We have a problem with men buying women and children for sex, using women for vehicles as objects for their very own self-gratification. If we decriminalize, which is the suggestion, that this livelihood is the answer for our highest targeted people, the poor, as many of us have mentioned, we are suggesting that this is the best we can offer them. Sadly, they are doing it due to poverty and various other elements, and this is society's fault. What we can do is provide dignified opportunities so this no longer goes on. The educated woman gets to work in a nice office, but heaven help if you are poor, because you must lay on your back and serve men all day to feed your children. As opposed to working for change, decriminalization is encouraging a broken system. I see it every single day. The notion of who we are, freedom, lobby, everyone has a right to pursue their happiness, celebrating people's choices, is what is being focused on in the decriminalization. We need other options than prostitution. Choices are being made out of desperation. We need meaningful alternatives. We need to see each other as humans. When humans experience sexual violence, that is a violation of their humanity, a woman who has been victimized. The current narrative of the sex worker will never reveal that. The decriminalization of prostitution promotes a mindset that it is acceptable for a child to aspire to become a sex worker, as this requires no level of education, appeals to the vulnerable and needy as an easier means to make money by simply selling their body for sex. We will be cultivating a culture that aspires to sell their bodies for sex rather than finish school, get a tertiary education, and find decent work. Is this the legacy we are creating in our diverse rainbow nation? What kind of legacy do we want to create in our diverse nation? A legacy of children dreaming to be doctors, scientists, teachers, lawyers, and the list can go on. Why study long hours, work hard at school, work hard in a job when one can simply be paid for sex? What producers will be put in place, procedures will be put in place to protect children from sexual grooming for sex work by traffickers, recruiters or predators? Data released from Pornhub shows that South Africa's top category searched on the website is ebony teen lesbian. What measures are being put in place to educate children on healthy sexual behaviors? If teen is the most second common searched category on one of the most popular porn sites in the world, which streamed nearly 92 billion videos in 2016, with South Africa being the 20th on the list of countries to most view porn, who is protecting our South African children from becoming targets for the adult sex industry? Effective measures need to be put in place to prevent our future generation from becoming part of a predatory system. In ending, a better future starts with shaping a young generation to truly understand what it means to respect and love another human being.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next presentation is from Cause for Justice.
Honourable Madam Chairperson, honourable members, fellow participants, Cause for Justice thanks the Multi-Party Women's Caucus for the opportunity to participate in the policy-making process by presenting these representations. We have a slideshow, if it could just please be put on the screen. Oh, that's all right, Madam Chairperson, we will continue without it. Cause for Justice is a non-profit human rights and public interest organisation. Our objective is to advance constitutional justice in South Africa. We do so primarily through participation in the legislative process, governmental decision-making structures, litigation, and through creating public awareness. Four of Cause for Justice's core values give it a particular interest in the law applicable to adult prostitution, namely the exercise of responsible freedom, the protection of the family unit, the protection and promotion of human dignity and worth, and the protection of the vulnerable in society, in other words, the achievement of social justice. Cause for Justice's interest in matters of sexual exploitation dates back to 2013 to March 2015. At that time, Cause for Justice and two other parties successfully challenged ICASA's lawfully flawed decision to approve the three dedicated pornography channels as part of Top TV's suite of channels in South Africa. The Supreme Court of Appeal found in Cause for Justice and its three co-applicants' favour. Cause for Justice also made submissions to the Films and Publications Board as part of the participatory process on the draft online content and regulation policy, and is a participant in the South African Law Reform Commission Project 107, Sexual Offences, Pornography and Children. Cause for Justice is also a stakeholder and active participant in the parliamentary process on the Film and Publications Amendment Bill of 2015, which proposes, amongst other interventions, the legalising of online pornography and watering down definitions of vile pornography. The National Assembly will debate and vote on the bill at its second reading tomorrow. As to the current status of South African law, so Africa follows the regime of total criminalisation. This means that prostitution and prostitution-related activities, such as brothel keeping and pimping and living off the earnings of prostitution, are prohibited by criminal sanction in terms of the Sexual Offences Act and the Sexual Offences Amendment Act. With regard to foreign jurisdictions follow a variety of prostitution regimes. These regimes range from full criminalization in countries such as the United States of America, with a notable exception, of course, of the state of Nevada, to partial criminalization in countries such as Sweden, famous for the so-called Nordic model, Canada also following partial criminalization, to countries where it is decriminalized and regulated, such as New Zealand, Germany, the Netherlands, and some states of Australia. With regard to South Africa's international law obligations, so Africa is party to certain international legal instruments and therefore is legally bound to give effect to these national legal instruments. We will mention three. The first is the United Nations Convention for the Suppression of the Traffic in Persons and the Exploitation of the Prostitution of Others. In its preamble, this convention reads or stipulates that prostitution and the accompanying evil of the traffic in persons for the purpose of prostitution are incompatible with dignity and worth of the human person and endangers the welfare of the individual, the family, and the community. Next, we will turn to the United Nations Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination and Against Women. In Article 6 of this convention, it states, that state parties shall take all appropriate measures, including legislation, to suppress all forms of traffic in women, exploitation of prostitution of women. And finally, we will mention the United Nations Protocol to prevent, suppress, and punish trafficking in persons, especially women and children, supplementing the United Nations Convention Against Transnational Organized Crime, also known as the Palermo Protocol. In its preamble, this protocol reads that state parties agree that effective action to prevent and combat trafficking in persons, especially women and children, requires a comprehensive international approach in the countries of origin.
It is interesting, well, it's noteworthy that academics say that most people who are in prostitution are subject to the treatment contained in the Palermo Protocol, since the definition of trafficking in the protocol is in reality describing what pimping does on a common daily basis. Next, we will turn to the basic question as we will look at the law and will focus on the requirements of the law. The basic question is law reform necessary? The purpose of the summit is to explore whether South African law as it stands needs to change. Law reform will need to, we will need law reform and the and changing the law reform with regard to prostitution will be necessary only in one of two instances. Either the law as it stands is unconstitutional, and or, secondly, there are policy considerations that militate so strongly in favor of reform that a challenge on the law must be effected. From the outset, let's say we know and we support that human rights must be protected and promoted and human rights violations should be stopped. So with that in mind, we move forward. Let's look at the policy considerations. Prostitution should only be decriminalized on the basis of public policy if the harms and the socioeconomic marginalization of prostitution flow either solely or mainly from the fact that prostitution is fully criminalized, as opposed to from the nature of practice of prostitution itself and its underlying causes. And secondly, the decriminalization of prostitution, whether fully or partially, would result in the reduction or negating of the harms of prostitution, including improvement of quality of life for prostitutes. The research, academic research that we have had regard to says that fully decriminalizing prostitution does not reduce or eradicate the harms of prostitution, and in fact exacerbates these harms. The violence continues, the stigma is not reduced, and in countries where prostitution has been decriminalized, such as Australia, the people who seem to benefit most from it are the pimps and the brothels, people who get the economic benefit thereof and not the women who are engaged in prostitution or other persons engaged in prostitution. Next, we will turn to the constitutionality of fully criminalizing prostitution. In the landmark case of State versus Jordan, the Constitutional Court already considered and found that the full criminalization of prostitution is constitutional. The court had regard to the right to equality, human dignity, freedom and security of the person, privacy, freedom of trade, occupation and profession, and the right to health care, food, water and social security. The court found that criminalizing prostitution does pass constitutional muster. So then, if there are not constitutional grounds or policy grounds to decriminalize prostitution, we do want to address the harms of prostitution that are present and do exist. What shall we do? If no law reform is required and all is necessary, what shall we do and what is the nature of the harms of prostitution? The harms of prostitution and the research that we have had regard to says that it is inherent in the activity of prostitution itself, and it will therefore exist wherever the activity of prostitution takes place, irrespective of the legal regime that is in place. The fact that prostitution is criminal, a criminal offense, is not the sole or main cause of the harms, the health risks, the gender discrimination, or social and economic inequalities of prostitution. There's no law that says that a prostitute should not have access to health care, and if a healthcare professional does not give the adequate health care to that person, it is a failure on the part of that health care professional and they should be held accountable. The decriminalization of prostitution will not address the harms or improve the socioeconomic circumstances of women. If we are serious addressing the socioeconomic circumstances of women, we need to go to what is actually the cause instead of wasting time and energy of going for something else that is not the cause. I feel that everybody here wants to honestly get at that, and we believe that the cause is not the laws, but rather the socioeconomic circumstances that women find themselves in that are desperate and that give them very limited opportunities, that make them choose prostitution as an option for survival, as opposed to focusing on giving the vulnerable in our society, poor people, marginalized people, people who do not have access to education, people who do not come from a background of privilege, better realities to experience true freedom in their lives and have meaningful lives. The only way to protect women in society, therefore, from prostitution's harms is to eradicate it by all means available. This will require a variety of interventions, both socioeconomic and legal. As far as socioeconomic interventions, proactively establishing viable opportunities for women to exit prostitution successfully and permanently, and to not enter prostitution in the first place. We need to offer our young people, our women and young men, all people better options than to sell their bodies in order to earn a living. We owe that to them as South Africans. Law, as to the legal interventions, criminal prohibitions to suppress and eradicate demand and supply. And the law has a normative role in recognizing that as a country that respects human rights, what is being done to you, we legally see that this is a human rights violation, and we will not deal with the problem by legalizing it and saying, well, it's not a problem anymore. Internationally, that you have to objectify a part of your body and break up your personhood, that you are not a whole person but an object for somebody else's gratification, is not something that we as a human rights... Sorry, I'll wrap up. In conclusion, the South African Law Reform Commission reached its conclusions after thorough process of investigation, public participation and consideration of research and law, both on a global scale and also looked at the proper application of all its observances to the South African context. Therefore, to deviate from such an extensive body of work by a specialist body with very authoritative recommendations should only be done in circumstances by deviating would cause a grave injustice. We agree with the report and support its conclusions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next presentation is from SANAC, South African National AIDS Council.
Evening, Honourable Chairperson, Members of Parliament, colleagues, comrades, and representative of sex workers. Let me then start with introducing myself. My name is Mapaseka Steve Letsike, and this evening I'm here in my capacity of as the co-chair of the South African National AIDS Council. And with me, I'm with...
Excuse me, can you maybe come closer, because I don't think, unless it's myself.
Are you struggling to hear me? Is this better? Or you would like me to come closer?
Please come closer.
Okay. Okay, good evening, Honorable Chairperson. As I had stated, that my name is Steve Letsike.
Can you please switch off the mic at the back?
Okay, is this better?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I hope it did not tap on my 10 minutes already. My name is Steve Letsike. I am the co-chair of the South African National AIDS Council. I'm here together with the CEO, also of the South African National AIDS Council. And again, not only is it my capacity as the co-chair of the council, but I also chair the SANEC Civil Society Forum. The South African National AIDS Council is a voluntary association of institutions established in 2000 to enhance and drive the South African multi-sectoral response on HIV, TB, and STI. SANEC brings together the role players from government, civil society, and the private sector at the national, provincial, and district and local level. SANEC has a vision to ensure a healthy life for all South Africans. The SANEC vision is underpinned by the commitment to zero new infection, zero prevention and of death, and also zero HIV and TB discrimination. We have a long way from zero on all these three fronts of HIV, TB, and STI. The vision is translated into action through the development, coordination, and monitoring of national plans of HIV. Relevant to these submissions are two plans which our former chairperson, who is the current president of the Republic, at that time, he was the chairperson of the council, Honorable Cyril Ramaphosa, launched in 2016 and 2017 respectively. These are the two things that he had launched. One is the South African National Sex Worker HIV Plan, which is 2016-2019. And again, last year he launched the National Strategic Plan on HIV, TB and STI, 2017-2022. SANEC developed this plan in consultation, including the voices of community members, technical experts, and government officials in the relevant fields, both on these plans highlighting the importance of addressing sex workers as key population in the national response. The National Sex Worker HIV Plan reports that the rate of HIV among sex workers is amongst the highest we have seen in the community in the country, with HIV prevalent rates 3 to 5 times higher amongst female sex workers than in any woman in the general population of their age group. Though sex workers constitute less than 1%, 0.01% of the population between the ages of 20 to 49, it estimates of HIV incidence in female sex workers and their clients account for up to 6% of the heteronormative or heterosexual transmission in South Africa. We face a serious challenge that we cannot ignore. This is why SANEC has prioritized the prevention and treatment of HIV among sex workers. We acknowledge that our national efforts to arrest new HIV infections will not succeed if sex workers are disempowered, marginalized, and stigmatized. We know that unless we address the multifaced lived experiences of sex workers, we will not achieve the public health goals of this country. These are an abundance of peer-reviewed public health articles which conclude that criminalization of sex worker is a barrier towards effective HIV and STI prevention, treatment care programming for sex workers. And as such, sex workers are at increased risk of being infected with HIV. We have been exposed to this firsthand as well through reports from SANEC sex worker sector. We are concerned that the current legislation surrounding sex work is an obstacle to the full and efficient implementation of South African National Sex Worker HIV Plan and South African National Strategic Plan for HIV, TB and STI. We are concerned that South African Law Reform Commission report on adult prostitution notes scant evidence for the public health case against criminalization of sex work. We are also concerned that South African Law Reform Commission report on adult prostitution made no reference to the South African National Sex Worker Plan, which outlined a holistic response to sex workers, including health, psychosocial support, economic empowerment, and legal and human rights. And we therefore want to recognize the following. We know that criminalization of sex work drives a negative perception amongst healthcare workers, amongst other public servants, and perpetuates high levels of stigma and discrimination against sex workers. It pushes sex workers underground, creates obstacles to accessing programs and away from services. It excludes sex workers from community and health system, increasing their vulnerability to illness and likelihood of negative health outcome and further health and social inequalities. We also recognize that it increases sex workers' likelihood of defaulting treatment, resistance to antiretroviral medicine, and increasing likelihood on onwards transmission to sexual partners and their clients. It reduces sex workers' power and rendering them vulnerable to violence, risky sexual behaviors, and human rights violation, poor condom negotiation, mental health stresses, and corruption that we see in the sector. Research has also shown us that decriminalization of sex work averts between 33% and 46% of HIV infections in the next decade. The National Sex Worker HIV Plan acknowledges that the legal status of sex work as a key impediment in full implementation, the national plan and guides the country to secure a political commitment for decriminalization of sex work, which enable access to services. As SANEC, we recommend the following, and these are fundamental principles, that it is informed by the principle that women and men, in all their diversity involving sex work, must not be denied health services, information and advice. It is informed that the principle that sex workers should not have to suffer and die from diseases
that are preventable and that are treatable and that affects all of us. It is informed by the principle that sex workers can no longer be denied their constitutional rights, be beaten up with no recourse, no justice, or that they can be subjected to unlawful arrest. We therefore, as South African National AIDS Council, support the full decriminalization of sex work to achieve public health goals and to safeguard human rights of all sex workers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we've got our last presentation, Ayanda Denge.
Good afternoon, honorable members of parliament, civil society organizations. Good afternoon to you as well. Ayanda Denge, who is that, first of all? To you that don't know, Ayanda Denge is just a typical sex worker standing on the street of Oxford Road. Ayanda Denge is standing now in Somerset Road in Greenpoint. But for Ayanda Denge to be in parliament, it's because I should give credit to an organization, SWET, one is the founder of Ayanda Denge, whereby they saw growth and capacity in me. And as much as I was once awarded with compliments of saying that I might use bombastic words, but basically I don't know where I'm going, I am giving credit to you. And I say with those words, a luta continua. My journey as a sex worker is still there, and my struggles are still there. I understand about the chairperson of the board of SWET. That is for four consecutive years. From 2014, when I was still struggling with cancer, KS, Kaposi sarcoma. As you can see, I am having, my feet are swollen at the current moment. I'm on HIV second line medication. But I do not remember my organization SWET boasting about Ayanda Denge, even at the AIDS conference that was in 2016 in Durban. Is it because of my lack of education or of me standing on street corner that you could not boast that you do have a sex worker standing there? And I fought for the empowerment of sex workers so that sex workers could be recognized. And I was also advocating for the decriminalization of sex work as I entered a home that was advocating for the decriminalization. However, when I actually saw and I analyzed that I'm being indoctrinated into saying that decriminalization is key in order to secure people's paychecks at the end of the month, to me, it's not decriminalization because I'm still sitting on the street corner till today. And I am sleeping under the bridge as a matter of fact. I might be looking clean today. Don't get shocked when you see me digging out of the dustbin. I'm Ayanda Denge. In December, I begged people there in the audience, people from different organizations, they gave me money so that I could eat. But my organization, you did not have shame. But I'm not fighting with you. For me, I just need to be frank. As much as you're advocating for decrim, sitting on a board, it means that you analyze and you have an introspection of a lot of things. Now, they say silence is golden. But to call a spade in the New South Africa, you can shut doors for yourself. So that's what I done. I called a spade. And when I done the introspection, and I looked at and I wanted to know, why is that lady that I was standing with that has just given birth to a child and is staying in a hotel? After 5 years she has to be, after 5 days she must go to the street and go sell sex because she has a rent to pay. Yes, I am 20 years standing on the streets of South Africa. My claim to fame, I've not been indoctrinated, my dear. You go anywhere. I might not have a petition with me, but yes, yes, the voices, it is within my eardrums and the images are still on my eyes. That those are the people that tell me every day, Chomi, Skateli, we're tired. You know, I just wish I can get a rich man to take me out of this business. And there is no rich man. There is no rich man to take you out of this business. It is the mindset of being positive that one day the Almighty, if you are a believer, will take you out. Because they say in the Bible, he who started a good work in you is bound and faithful to complete it. And believe you me, ma'am, to stand on the street corner in the weather is negative 2. To be privileged, like Ayanda, when I talk about sex work, I don't only talk about standing on the street corner. I can tell you about the internet. When I'm in a secure venue, and the old man with genital warts come to me and ask me, could you ring me? And he said, I'm desperate and I need the money I'm going to do it, my dear. Because why I need, I got bills to pay. Or, I have been advanced, I've been a cyber webcam model. And while you're doing your webcam session, you are being recorded. And that video goes viral, your image is tarnished. So, if there is a model, and if, as MPs, people in power, I'd ask you to remove the honorable, but to put on the mother figure, because at the end of the day, you're mothers and fathers, and think if it was your child standing there, and then you are saying that decriminalization or whatever module you are pushing for I have not power to sensitize and change your minds. But that module will be an impact for generations to come. And remember my industry, my dear, to stand on a street corner, you have to be intoxicated somehow, somewhere. It's like you want to be drinking something. I'm on ARVs. I sometimes forget to take my ARVs because I'm drunk or whatever. Because why? I'm scared. I don't know am I going with a serial killer or what. I have not been paid by no organization to be speaking. I'm speaking out of the horse's mouth, out of Ayanda Denga's mouth. You see, when I leave here, I'll be going to Greenpoint to go work. And I am still working. So if you see me around the streets roaming, don't think that, you know, this person has a pizza board. I am a stroller. But yes, I was chairperson, accounting for millions, and I when I asked for empowerment from within, I saw what was the price tag of empowerment. It was to go into silos. So I asked for a Batu Pele perception, and Batu Pele, yes, people first. Do not put your missions and visions first, because to stand on the street corner when it's negative, to Bafetu, you don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like. In those words, I'm still saying, Aluta, continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, it is clear from the deliberations and the presentations made that there are critical considerations that you must all go back and assess. In those few words, I'm handing over to the Chairperson, who's going to do the overall remarks and closure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I am going to plead with the members of Parliament. Looking at the time, and I'm told by the Secretary that they arranged for the transport to come early, which is 6 o'clock. I'm going to plead with you that whoever has questions of clarity, they can send them to the Secretary of the Multi-Party so that we can note them for Parliament to deal with all the issues that has been said here. Is that fine with everyone? Yes. Thank you. But I'm just going to make a few closing remarks. During my opening remarks at the beginning of the session, I spoke about the reasons why the Multi-Party Women's Caucus voice is support for the decriminalization of sex work. I alluded to the mandate that was bestowed to the Multi-Party Women's Caucus by two women's parliament sessions. The South African Law Reform Commission promised us here today that they will be conducting further research and engagements, including public participation activities before the end of 2018. This is encouraging considering that here today organizations were split in half. We had presentations from organizations in support of the Law Reform Commission recommendations, as well as presentation from those organizations totally against the recommendations contained in this report, in the report. The presentations from various organizations provided different views and perspectives on the issue of sex work. We understand that the issue of sex work is not only a sensitive matter, but it is also very complex. The complexity of the sensitivity is not only about preferences for a certain model, but also about terminology used. Other organizations are talking about prostitutes, while others are talking about sex workers. However, what I observed is that all the organizations present here today have genuine care as well as best interest for the women involved in this country, in this industry rather. I would like all organizations here today to acknowledge and appreciate their common ground, which is the best interest of women involved in the sex industry. We have heard all your arguments for and against certain law reform models, and the diversity of your views richly enhanced our knowledge base as members of Parliament. I want to assure everyone here that we, as the steering committee of the Multi-Party Women's Caucus, we will continue engaging on this issue. We will collate all the views presented here and engage further on the report that will emanate from today's session. We will do everything in our disposal to ensure that the country adopts an appropriate legislative reform. We will continue further our engagement with South African Law Reform Commission and the Ministry of Justice and the non-governmental organization working in the sector. I want to thank everyone who attended this session, especially the honorable members of Parliament, because I know Monday is usually reserved for constituency work. Thank you, honorable members, for prioritizing this constituency today. All the organizations presented today, I encourage you to find each other and work together towards betterment of all women in this country. Travel home safely and have a good night. Thank you.
Madam Chair, sorry, Denise here. Madam Chair, may I?